using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 21st of September, year of our Lord 2021, day 556 of the New World Disorder. Today we're going to take a look at that disorder. We're going to take a look at what is going on in Australia. Massive protests and violence for the last 2 days, because now they are pushing construction workers. They're telling them, you're going to take the vaccine or you're going to be fired. And they're taking to the streets by the thousands. And these guys are not backing down from threats of violence. So we're going to take a look at what is happening with that. We're going to take a look. This is extending everywhere, from construction workers in Australia to TV weathermen. You know, perhaps we should have done something about this 556 days ago. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Yeah, this wasn't a problem 556 days ago, right? Because we had President Trump in the White House. He wasn't going to do anything like this. And then as we saw this roll out, nobody could believe that this was going to be a lockdown until mandatory vaccination. Didn't believe me. I was a crazy right-wing conspiracy theorist. I was paranoid. I was telling people there was a medical dictatorship. Daily Beast, BuzzFeed, criticizing me for saying that. Alex Jones firing me because I opposed this traitor Trump, who imposed all this stuff on us, warp speed, skipped all the tests. Don't tell me that he wouldn't have mandated this stuff. The only difference between Trump and Biden is that Trump would have done it with carrots instead of sticks, but it would have been corporate coercion nevertheless. He is so proud of what he did. As a matter of fact, it's the only thing he accomplished. And so how is this rolling out worldwide? Because these are the Trump shots that are sent around the world. In Australia, for the last couple of days, you had, first yesterday, you had protesters wearing their construction clothing. You know, we had the yellow vests years ago as their lifestyles were being shut down in terms of their freedom of mobility in France by the Green New Deal at that point in time. But as I've said many times, it doesn't matter whether the globalist justification is that we're going to have a freezing of the planet, global cooling into a new ice age, or 9 years after that, that's the way Earth Day began, 9 years after that, we're going to flip the narrative 180 degrees and we're going to say it's going to be global warming and everybody's going to die unless you do what we say. Then we flipped the script last year. But when it was still about global warming, and that's not finished, they're coming back with that as well. When they're doing the global warming, as a matter of fact, Travis, could you fix this monitor for me? Because we're having some problems with this thing. When they flip the script, all of the details, all of the goals still remained the same. And so you had yellow vests who were pushing against this attempt to take away all of our mobility. And now you've got the orange vests, the people who were doing construction work in Australia. Now they're taking to the streets because their jobs are being taken down. And they went to the union because the union wouldn't do anything to defend their jobs. That's where we are now. This is how broad the sellout has become. The people at the top are complicit in this. Everybody. It doesn't matter whether it's anybody at the federal government or whether it is the state government or whether it is the trade unions. It doesn't matter if it's the liberals or conservatives, the socialists or the libertarians, they've all sold you out. And so the protesters went to the union building shouting, "We are union, F the jab." They threw projectiles at the construction, forestry, maritime, mining, and energy union. headquarters. Union officials attempted to barricade the doors. They used a fire extinguisher to spray demonstrators from inside. Let me tell you something. These construction workers are the closest thing we have left to real men anymore. They're not backing down from this stuff. I've got some clips to show you where you got a cop running up to a guy. Tweeted this out. You got to see this. Cop all armored up with a weapon in his hand, probably, rubber bullets in the gun. But he's pointing the gun at him, says, "Move on, move on, get back. And the guy just stands there and says, "F you." And another guy walks up and the cop starts backing back. We have to stand up for our liberty. If you stand down at this point in time, you're done. You're done. You have to look them in the eye and say, "I'm not doing it." And so protesters shouted freedom at the police officers, while one man appeared to threaten a Ruptly journalist who was reporting the scene. This is coming from RT. "Australian unions will never be intimidated," said the union leaders, "by violence or threats. No, they'll be bribed by politicians, globalist politicians, to do whatever the globalist politicians want to do. They won't be intimidated by threats of violence. They will use threats of violence to intimidate people. They'll simply take the bribes and they'll have the government use the violent threats. We will not be intimidated by violence or threats from extremists who refuse to put the good of the community first." Uh-huh. Yeah. Unions. So civic-minded, right? When have you ever seen unions so civic-minded? In the past, they're willing to shut down anything and everything to get what they want for their people, a raise or whatever. But now, the community is more important than the union. What they're saying is, whenever you hear community, you understand they're talking about communists. They're talking about the public health officials. They're talking about the bureaucrats and the people who say, we're just doing this for the common good. We don't care about the individuals. But it's the common good, this imaginary thing that doesn't exist if you don't take care of the individuals. The majority of the people, as they started saying, these are outside agitators, right? Where have we heard that before? Let's see, was that Richard Nixon or something? Yeah, I think so. Bunch of outside agitators out here. No, an Israeli-Australian journalist, Avi Yemeni, said no, 100% union members, no matter how you try to spin it. So it went on for 7 hours. They just wrapped it up. It was going on as those of us in the U.S. were asleep. Participants were moving through the city today. So that was yesterday. Today they're moving through the city for 7 hours in a protest of the vaccine mandates that are going to be put across the entire construction industry, across all of Australia. These people will lose their jobs. You bow to this injection or you lose their job. Well, they were thinking of maybe a third alternative.
They're throwing shit at the cops. Look at that.
The cops are running away with the cars as they're pelting them with missiles. And then here comes a cop car. And watch how fast he drives through the crowd. It's like he's trying to run people down. I mean, that's just amazing to me. Deadly weapon. Using his car as a deadly weapon.
What the hell, man? Whoa, whoa, whoa! Whoa! Whoa!
Here they come. Here come the cops with shields.
Whoa, whoa!
Well, I guess we're going back into medieval times. Right? We got shields and street gladiators. Of course, they do have rubber bullets now. Tear gas. All right. Then you had this interesting encounter that I was just mentioning. Take a look at this guy standing his ground. He just so his arms folded and the cop backs up. I don't want you to see that again. This bears repeating. Move, move, move. He stands there with his arms folded, and the cop backs up. See? If we would have stood up 556 days ago, but, we had Republicans that were helping us. Or in the UK, you had conservatives. Couldn't believe that conservatives and Republicans would destroy the rule of law. But they did. And then you have this police officer engaged in a discussion by one of the protesters, asking him, why in the world are you doing this? And listen to what the guy has to say. By the way, this didn't work in Nuremberg. This is the back and forth between one of the protesters and not one, but two cops. But one cop dialogues with him quite a bit. Listen to this.
If you've had enough of much as us, why are you still enforcing it, boys?
You have to.
No, you don't have to.
This is what, listen, we're not here to argue with you unless, go home. Otherwise, they start issuing tickets. Right. We don't want to do it, but we will do it. Right?
Well, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. Stand up for what you believe in rather than paycheck.
Just go home, all right? We get paid to do this, mate. I'm just as over this protest as you are. By protest, I mean lockdown, all right?
Fair enough,
unfortunately,
fair enough.
I got to do what I got to do.
You don't have to do that. You're choosing to do it for
I'm not
paycheck.
Skilled to do anything else, mate. So unfortunately, mate, this time of my life, that's what I have to do.
And the people of us that aren't skilled, we don't get paid. We're not getting food at the moment.
I hear you, mate. My wife's in the same position. She's out of a job at the moment as well. I understand you're being pissed off about it, but there's a way to go about it, that's all. And unfortunately, punching on with coppers isn't it, mate.
I respect that. I feel like it's like an animal's back in your corner. Guns.
Look, at the end of the day, I agree with you.
Then why are you standing on this side and not with us?
Because that's what I get paid to do.
So you agree with me, but you get paid to do that, so you stand
which
on that side.
Why I'm trying to talk to you the way I'm talking to you, as opposed
exactly,
to...
Exactly, because you're doing what you're getting paid to do, not what you stand in, and that's why I disrespect you.
That's fine, and I'm still asking you to go home, please.
Yeah, get your paycheck so you and your wife can eat. We won't, but you can eat, so...
We're not going home, we're just walking.
I know, we're not going home, we're not listening to your orders anymore.
No, I'm just letting you know, we come back again, you're all going to be arrested.
There you go, that's fine, mate. We don't, if you can't tell, we're not afraid anymore.
That's right, they're not afraid anymore. Isn't that amazing? I agree with you, I understand. You know, my wife's out of a job too. I don't know if she got fired because she wouldn't take the vaccine. I agree with you, but this is all I'm trained to do. Only thing I can do is bust heads for the people at top. Well, I tweeted that out today. I put it out on Gab, put it out on Twitter. I said, how about this? What if we offer to pay these purely mercenary cops who are out there willing to bust heads for cash? What if we were to pay them more than the politicians? There's more of us. I know the politicians have got the money, but, you know, we could take that away from them. But, you know, there's not that many politicians and bureaucrats who are giving the orders at the top. Maybe these guys could take them out. We could split the cash. Who knows? Go to the Federal Reserve and take the printing presses over. We could probably run those printing presses. They have to have somebody fix those. Now, do you think that Mnuchin, you think that Yellen know how to fix a printing press? They know how to fix judges. They know how to fix politicians, but they can't do anything real. It's time for the common people to stand up and take this thing back. Thousands of construction workers dressed in high-visibility orange. They said flares sparked, projectiles were thrown at the police. They said that, and they've been. It went on for more than 7 hours. Bottom line is, as Gerald Slinty said, when people lose everything, they lose it. But I just want to go back to that cop. That cop who says, well, I agree with you. That's why I'm telling you, you know, I've given you guys a chance to go away. I don't really want to bash your heads, but I'll do it because that's what they're paying me for. That's all I can do. Reminded me of this.
Now we'll see how these Russians deal with a crack SS division.
Hans?
Have courage, my friend.
Yeah. Hans, I've just noticed something.
These communists are all cowards.
Have you looked at our caps recently?
Our caps?
The badges on our caps. Have you looked at them?
What? No. A bit?
They've got skulls on them. Have you noticed that our caps have actually got little pictures of skulls on them?
I don't,
Hans, are we the baddies?
Yeah. I wonder if those cops have ever seen the comedy skit. Are we the baddies? Are we just following the orders? I follow the orders. They give me the orders. I follow the orders. And, you know, not allowed to make Nazi references, even when they apply directly. I had a listener from New York send me a notification talking about, you know, I reported on some of what happened yesterday. Big crowds over the weekend in New York City protesting this. And he said he was absolutely outraged by the New York Post's coverage of this. Now, understand, the New York Post is a Murdoch publication. Pharmaceutical profits there, Fox News. He said, I heard you talk about the freedom rallies in New York City and around the world. I attended the amazing one in New York City, and I was annoyed by its tawdry description in the New York Post, but not surprised. The article's title tells you what's to come. The title was Times Square, Stormed by Anti-Vaxxers Protesting in New York City. He says, well, first of all, is there any Times Square outside of New York City? Anyway, no one stormed anything. The rally steadfastly focused on the common cause of freedom against tyranny. Party affiliation, political ideology, your vaccine stance, and just about all divisive proclivities were actively shunned. Instead, you heard things like, if you're vaxxed, we love you. If you're unvaxxed, we love you. But the New York Post launched its mealy-mouthed hit piece by making it seem like we were watching strippers in Auschwitz. And subsequently, every photo was captioned with anti-vaxxer this, anti-vaxxer that. Yes, anti-vaxxers. Yeah, maybe we need to come up with a new name for this. I saw that somebody on Instagram had started using the term purebloods and create a whole line of merchandise about it, purebloods. Anyway. This is the way they reported it, what he was talking about. He says, yeah, it makes it sound like we're watching strippers at Auschwitz. The event included a pole dancer and a person who held a sign comparing the inoculation efforts to the Nazis' mass murder of Jews. The sign, one woman's sign said, how did the Nazis do it? They said the Jews were diseased. Is that factual or not? I think that's factual. I think it's an appropriate analogy. I don't think the human nature changes. See, it's just beyond the pale to say that America could ever be like Nazi Germany. We could never be like the Soviet Union. We could never be like communist China. All it takes is a population that is passive, that doesn't understand the value of liberty. That's what it takes. You have a population like that, and the cockroaches will fill in all the gaps from the top down. That's really what it is, right? You leave your garbage outside on the street for a long time, and guess what? You start seeing rats. You leave dirty dishes around in the house all the time, you start seeing cockroaches. If you let these people do whatever they wish, the cockroaches and rats will come. And they're just crawling all over this country right now, every country on earth. There's nothing unique about America versus Nazi Germany. At the time, they were the most cultured, most educated people on earth. Can't say that about America, can we? Anyway, I thought this was pretty amazing in this story from the New York Post. Listen to this. Quote, American flags and less offensive signage were shown. Oh, you mean there is something less offensive than an American flag? You mean the American flag is the most offensive thing that you could have out there? Was that a Freudian slip? Was it some kind of a junior journalist writing that copy? American flags and less offensive signage. Things like freedom over fear, wake up New York. Yeah, but everywhere, you know, COVID... the anti-vaxxers, under every caption, he's right, every caption begins, anti-vaccine protesters gather in Times Square for a rally against vaccine mandates. And the picture is a sign that says, COVID vaccine victims, hundreds of thousands of people dead and injured. How many more before you take a stand? And it has a website, COVIDVaccineVictims.com. But that was captioned, anti-vaccine protesters. Next one, captioned, oh, wait, anti-vaccine protesters. I think there's a lack of imagination there at the New York Post. Anti-vaccine protesters storm through Times Square to protest against vaccine passport mandates. They're not storming. They're not storming. And then another one. Let's see. How does this? Oh, anti-vaccine protesters. That's a caption there. And they show a picture of, again, it's a very diverse crowd. You got people all ages. You got black. You've got white people showing up, standing hand in hand. Anti-vaccine protesters seen raising their hands as a lady throws peace signs in the air. And the T-shirts that they're selling there for $20 is it's a parody of I Love New York. You've seen that, right? The I Heart NY, stacked two lines. But it's a 2021 version. I Heart apostrophe D. I loved New York. Because this isn't New York anymore. This isn't Kansas anymore. It's not America anymore. It's not the world that we knew before. This world is changing. It's changed already. The institutions have failed. And the question is, who's going to build them back? And with what values will they be built back with? One person holds up a sign. Government protects my rights. I protect my health. Another sign. Again, another anti-vaxxer sign. Always anti-vaxxers. Vaccines are made with aborted fetal cells. And then, you know, when we look at this, Goodwin's Law, you know, you don't talk about Nazis. That's just awful to do that, isn't it? You shouldn't make that kind of comparison. That means that you've already lost the argument. Oh, does it? In France, a man put up a poster. See if you can pull this up, Travis. A man put up a poster of Emmanuel Macron, the little dictator there now. And it shows him dressed in a Nazi uniform, photoshopped his face in there with a little Nazi. Yeah, there you go. Zoom in on that. With a little Nazi mustache. And then next to it, it says, obey, get vaccinated. Now, Macron's not Hitler, is he? He's not a despot. He's not a tyrant. Well, he fined the guy 10,000 euros. So, yeah, it's a total hyperbole, isn't it? Until they validate it by fining the guy 10,000 euros. That's more than $10,000. I mean, just imagine that. Yeah, he showed exactly what he is. He just proved the guy was right. It isn't satire. It's descriptive. You have a Texas hospital CEO warns that his facility might have to close because of Biden's vaccine mandate. And we got one video here that's not on the clip, Travis, and that is the medical resistance. Can you pull that up and run that in a second here? Texas hospital CEO warns that his facility might have to close. Now, think about this. Is this a pandemic? Is it a health crisis? Again, these are nurses, so many of them leaving, that he's going to have to close the entire hospital. Last week, we saw that a New York hospital said, we're going to have to stop delivering babies. Now, nobody's going to stop aborting babies, not in New York. Travis, can you get the medical resistance thing? Okay, get that ready. But nobody's going to stop abortions, but they will stop baby deliveries because they don't have enough nurses. This Texas hospital will be closing down in its entirety because the nurses are not going to take the vaccine. Now, think about this. As I've said many times before, these are nurses who have been there for the last 18 to 20 months. They were okay, but now they're going to have to get the vaccine or they're going to be fired. And these are nurses who have been there on the quote-unquote front lines of the pandemic. They've watched the virus. And they've also been on the front lines for the last 7-8 months. They've watched the adverse effects from the vaccine. Maybe we should pay attention to what these nurses are saying. They've seen the results of the virus, the pandemic. They've seen the results of the vaccine, and they're like, no way. I'll quit my career. I'll be jobless, I'll be homeless before I'll take that thing. That's a pretty emphatic stance, don't you think? Should we pay attention to that? And should we pay attention to the fact that Biden and these people are so hell-bent on forcing you to take a vaccine that hasn't been tested, that was rushed through by Trump, manufactured at haste, sent around the world, where they dump tens of billions of dollars on these vaccine companies? And you got 9 new billionaires that are associated with these vaccine companies. The level of corruption, the level of desire. I mean, just when you look at the fact that these vaccine companies don't have to stand behind their product. And then when you look at the flip side of this, that Trump and Biden are so intent on you getting this vaccine that they will shut down hospitals in the name of public health. This is crazy. This is beyond idiocracy. The inability of people to even think. There was a piece on CNN attacking Sean Hannity. They said, this guy's dangerous. He's got a four-word phrase that he keeps repeating over and over again, and they played it where he said it over and over again. What was the four-word phrase that was so dangerous? Sean Hannity was saying to people, do your own research. Do your own research. I would just distill it to one word. Think. Think. Think about the fact that they don't have any liability. Think about the fact that in the name of public health, they're going to shut down hospitals because nurses who have been there for 2 years, and this is a public health emergency, so we're going to shut down the hospitals and we're going to do it 2 months from now. If it was a public health emergency, they'd have to do it now. But they're going to give them 2 months to think about this. This is nothing but raw intimidation and corruption on a level we've never seen before. Never seen before. Worldwide. So show this. This is a picture of, I think it's 33,000 people. I don't have the clip here with me. Medical professionals in Canada are standing for this, but this is a massive group. Run that video, Travis. They're standing in formation, in essence, as if it's a military group. And go ahead, can you run that? Okay, you can't. All right, I want to show that to you. Maybe we'll get that later. So as this guy in Texas is saying, it's huge in our rural community, as in all the other rural communities. We have high poverty levels and things like that. So we have to have a lot of Medicare usage in our community and stuff like that, he said. And so they're being blackmailed with money. All the people said Trump would never do anything like that. Again, it was the carrot. Now you got Biden coming in with the stick. Here, we'll financially incentivize the hospitals. We'll give you $13,000 if you can. Well, you don't even have to have a test. We don't have the tests. They don't work. They told the hospitals last August of 2020, the American Hospital Association, AHA, said, wait a minute, you told us at the beginning of this thing that you want documentation now of PCR tests. You told us at the beginning you didn't have the tests and they didn't work. And now you're refusing to pay us the bonus of 20 to 25% if we've got a COVID patient? So they paid them $13,000 if they were, you know, put them in, get a positive PCR test, 20 to 25% on everything that they do. If they can put them on a ventilator, they get another $39,000. So Trump incentivized this with a carrot. Now Biden is coming along and saying, now we're going to close your hospital. We're going to remove all your Medicaid and Medicare payments. We're going to refuse to pay those if you don't have a fully vaccinated staff. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. Yeah, I don't have enough people to run the hospital because they're going to walk away. These people who have seen the so-called pandemic, who have seen the so-called safe and effective vaccines, these warp speed vaccines, this miracle of modern science, this moonshot, as Al Mohler and Franklin Graham and the Pope all describe it. Another Texas hospital CEO said the jab mandate could hurt his organization too because it's only 70% vaccinated. And that means they're going to lose a third of the people. Well, it'd be devastating for the community. Seminole Hospital District CEO Larry Gray told KCBD, we have a large percentage of our revenue that comes from Medicare, Medicaid, and those kinds of products. Last week, a New York hospital announced that they were going to stop delivering babies. But, you know, hey, that's okay. We're going to continue to do that. Now, again, as we look at this and the news, the nurses who absolutely refuse to take the vaccine, fire me first, but I'm not going to take that vaccine. I've worked, I've spent 20 years, I've spent a lot of time in school. Doctors have said this as well. But I'll resign before I'll take that vaccine. We should listen to healthcare professionals like that. Instead, we're going to only have the healthcare professionals who are too ignorant or spineless to be of any use. But Project Veritas talked to a whistleblower. This is a registered nurse, and she recorded some of the things, some of the conversations between her and Dr. Maria Gonzalez, an ER doctor with the Department of Health and Human Services, with registered nurses and with others. This broke last night. So here is Project Veritas and the whistleblower that worked for HHS.
The government doesn't want to show that the darn vaccine is full of shit.
Tell us about who this person is.
Dr. Gonzalez is one of our emergency room doctors at Phoenix Indian Medical Center.
And she's a federal employee?
Correct.
Now you got this guy in room 4 who got his second dose of vaccine on Tuesday, has been short of breath.
He's got myocarditis.
Yes!
Oh, this is bullshit.
Let's see.
Probably myocarditis due to the vaccine.
Right.
But now they're not going to blame the vaccine.
Well, and you know what? But he has an obligation to report that, doesn't he?
They are not reporting.
Right.
Because they want to shove it under the under the mat.
What patient was she referring to?
She was referring to that patient, that 30-something-year-old patient that had congestive heart failure.
And in that particular patient's case, it was not reported.
No.
May I see your badges? You're Jody O'Malley of the Department of Health and Human Services. This is the United States government identification. I'm looking at the CDC website. It says that you're required to report adverse events following vaccinations. One of those would be congestive heart failure.
Yeah, it's a huge one.
Were there other instances that they didn't report?
Oh, I've seen dozens of people come in with an adverse reaction.
You know, it's really sad. She had just come back from surgery, from leave.
So what are we looking at here?
You're looking at me transferring her to a higher level of care that could handle her condition.
And this is a colleague at your hospital who got sick.
She didn't want to take it because of her religious beliefs. And she was coerced into taking it.
Why are you choosing to blow the whistle? It's not what a lot of people would do. They're scared, they're afraid. Are you afraid?
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm afraid because my faith lies in God and not man. This is evil at the highest level. You have the FDA, you have the CDC, that are both supposed to be protecting us.
Are you afraid they're going to retaliate against you?
Yeah. I'm a federal employee. What other federal employees do you see coming out?
But you put your faith in God.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, this is why, folks, the Marxists, the authoritarians, the totalitarians, that's why they come after the Christians first. Because if we have real convictions, we will stand up and do the types of things that Jody O'Malley, insider and registered nurse at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. She said, yeah, I'm scared about this. Yeah, it's going to have tremendous personal cost to her. But there is a higher standard. She said in that interview, she said, I'm not afraid of blowing the whistle because my faith lies in God and not man. You know, like, what kind of person would I be if I knew all of this and said nothing? This is evil at the highest level, she said. Evil at the highest level. What are we called to do? Are we called to submit to our employer when they do evil? We're hearing this from a lot of talk radio hosts on Christian radio. You submit to your employer. You don't get to pick and choose what you disagree with and what you disobey. Wrong. You're absolutely wrong about this. If she had listened to somebody like Todd Friel, she wouldn't have spoken out about this. And I pick him out because he's done 5 programs in the last week to tell people to categorically obey everything that the people above you tell you to do. That is absolutely wrong. You are to resist evil. That's part of submitting to God, resisting evil. She submitted to God. I'm leaving it in his hands. I have to do the right thing. I have to resist this evil. This is evil at the highest level. You have the FDA. You have the CDC, she said, that are both supposed to be protecting us, but they're under the government, and everything that we've done so far is unscientific. She's watching people be coerced, injured, murdered. But it's bigger than that. Bigger than that. You got another hospital. The UAB hospital at University of Alabama, I think. UAB is in Alabama. They were requiring employees to get the shot. But now after 1 month of doing that, even in spite of Biden's mandate, which has no authority, folks. You understand, as I pointed out last week, the limited number of OSHA employees that he has, and I forget what the numbers were, but the 10th Amendment Center broke it down. They said years ago, they said, we've got so few, we got to have more OSHA employees. You know, we got to have them everywhere. You know, like Biden is going to put an army of IRS people everywhere. Biden wants an additional 80,000 IRS employees. Maybe he should have made them OSHA employees if he's going to use OSHA to try to enforce this, because as they were saying, we got so few OSHA employees that if we were to go around to all the different businesses, we'd get to pay them a visit once every something like 160 years. I forget exactly what the numbers were, but it was ludicrous. They don't have the manpower, fortunately, to do what Biden wants them to do. And so it's going to require a lot of cooperation from businesses. It's going to require a lot of cooperation from lesser magistrates and from local government. And we can shut this thing down because he doesn't have the authority to do that. We must shut this down. Because if we don't, you understand that, again, if you're going to shut down hospitals, this isn't about health. This is not about private health, individual health, or public health. This is about destroying our country. Biden wants a civil war. He wants the kind of violence that they've pushed these people into in Australia. He wants to push us into a greater depression. They're breaking the supply lines. They're flooding us with debt. They're planning at least $2 trillion in taxes. And you know how that always works out. The taxes that they put on you are never what they tell you up front. They're admitting that it would be at least $2 trillion. Wasn't it nice that Trump showered us with all that cash last year, all those stimulus checks and everything? I never got one. My son didn't get one. I don't know what the deal is with it. I'm not going to spend any time trying to scrounge up government handouts. I've never taken any government handouts. I'm not criticizing anybody who does. I'm just saying my disgust with the government is such a level, I don't even want to ask these people for unemployment or stimulus checks or anything else like that. People criticize Ayn Rand, said, well, look, she took Social Security. She paid into Social Security. Everybody pays into Social Security. That's one of the biggest ripoffs ever. So you paid into Social Security, and you'll be lucky to get a tiny fraction of what you paid in, not even adjusting it for inflation. So we're not talking about that. And we're not talking about the rest of the stuff. And I don't have any problem with people getting the money. As a matter of fact, take all you can and collapse this system even sooner, because it's corrupt. It needs to be swept away. But we have to pay attention to what's coming next. There's no reason to save the federal government. There's no reason to save the schools, the government schools. Sweep them away. Let's focus on transcending this system. But when you look at the fact that Biden is willing to break the supply lines everywhere. I've got a lot of stories about what is the weird shortages that are showing up in different places, all over the place. He wants to destroy everything. They're raising it to the ground, burning it down, so they can build back better, so they can build their dystopia on top of the ruins. And when you see the hospitals being shut down because professional healthcare people who've been on the front lines are refusing to get these vaccines, and they're shutting entire hospitals down. Now you know what's going on, don't you? So this hospital says after a month of mandating the shots, they said, we're not going to be able to operate, so they reversed the vaccine mandate and said, now we're going to wait to see about the details for the potential federal mandate. But state leaders said this reversal won't make a huge impact right now. Look, the reality is that this is going to be challenged. It's already been challenged in many ways. You've already got 27 states minimum. That was where it was several days ago. You have 25 governors, all Republican, because this is now going to become a partisan football. Shouldn't be, but it will be. Of course, I'm glad that they're pushing it back. I don't care if it's partisan football or not at this point in time. You've got to fight back with everything that you can. But the Republicans, the Republican governors who sat still for the last 500 days or so because Trump was doing it, they're not going to push back. And you've got two Republican state attorneys general and a couple of states where there's a Democrat governor. They're pushing back against Biden. So you've got 27 states minimum who are pushing back against this. You've got individual businesses. You've got trade organizations pushing back against this. You don't need to fire anybody right now. If you got a business, you don't need to worry about that right now. And then we have this happening in Hawaii. This was sent to me by a listener. Said, please help us to spread the word. We have hundreds of patriots here in Maui working hard to wake the people up. They're asleep. It's so frustrating, so defeating. But in the past few weeks, relentless patriot efforts have started to work. We're making a dent. The public support brings tears to your eyes when you see it. Thank you for your help in spreading the word. Hawaii is a big deal. It is totally draconian, and we need help. So they said, here is our protest from this weekend. I don't know. I said he. I don't know if it's male or female. Here's our protest from this weekend. Zero media coverage. And this is a big deal. He said, we went from hundreds to thousands of supporters. And I want to show this to you. But remember, I played some clips from these people once before, I believe. Somebody in Hawaii. They had a rally. Much, much smaller than it is now. And that's the key thing. I should have gone back and gotten that clip so you could see how much this rally has grown. But this is what it looks like. They just put a camera on, and they just roll down the street. And look at this. Look at how many people there are. It just goes on and on and on. And before, I had played somebody who was speaking at one of these rallies, and he was talking about being in a hospital and what he had seen. And now look at the size of the crowd. I'm just going to let this run. Pull the sound down a little bit, Travis. This is what it says on the Rumble video. Hawaii is under attack. As it's the new Pearl Harbor, the people of Maui only want a town hall meeting with our tyrannical mayor and governor. Our numbers have grown. We started with 200 people on the ground in Maui and have now grown to over 5,000 with public support nearing 100,000. We must be heard. The public sentiment is clear for the patriots who are honking horns and thumbs up in excitement and support for our patriotic efforts as they drive by our peaceful protests. The people of Maui, both vaxxed and unvaxxed, came together Saturday, September the 18th, in the spirit of aloha and unity, which is our message to make our presence known in the dispute of the so-called experts. Thousands have lost their homes, their businesses, their livelihoods. Hundreds have been killed. The people of Maui and the state of Hawaii are waking up to the tyrannical dictates imposed on its citizens. No legislative oversight, no public input, and it seems that there will be no end to this madness. If Hawaii falls, we all fall. That's right, we all have to hang together, folks. We have to resist this. Got to resist this. And you can see, yeah, this guy's saying, he's saying, we're in distress, we're in distress. Our government is tyrannical. And this just goes on and on. This video is more than 2.5 minutes long as they're rolling down. Look at this crowd. This has really blown up since the last time. Last time I reported this, there's a few people that were standing in a park, you know, probably 40, 50 people in a park. Look at how big this has become. All right, we could let this roll on for a little bit longer, but you get the idea. It's a massive pushback. Peaceful protests, but we got to understand that when they fire everybody from their jobs, that's going to make people begin to starve, suffer economically because they've already pulled the unemployment benefits. That's when things are going to really get dangerous. And we better have some politicians with a backbone to stand up and do something about it. We'll be right back. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right. We have, why does the CDC recognize natural immunity for chickenpox but not for COVID? It's a question asked by the Free Thought Project. If you have chickenpox, according to the CDC, on their website, they have a link which is still up. They haven't taken it down yet, but if this gets some traction, they will. Chickenpox vaccination, what everyone should know. Quote, people 13 years of age and older who have never had chickenpox or received a chickenpox vaccine should get two doses, at least 28 days apart. But then they go on to say, you do not need to get the chickenpox vaccine if you have evidence of immunity against the disease. That means that you've had it, you can recover from it, and you can show it, even via a laboratory test to find the antigens, right? You do not need a vaccine for measles if you've already had measles and you've cleared the rash, right? That's why I keep saying the fraud of Trump when he said this.
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important.
Measles.
This is really going around now. They have
MMR.
To get their shots.
Yeah, they have to get their shots. No, it was important for him in 2019. It was important for Trump, the leader of the evangelical Christians, the guy who is celebrated, they just had him do some kind of a prayer event. I even bear to look at it. It's like having the Antichrist lead a prayer. This guy who is the idol of the evangelicals. In 2019, the purpose of that, they got to get the shots, was to remove religious and medical exemptions for students to go to school in New York and California and other places, but primarily New York and California. You had Dr. Pan in California fighting all the mothers. Remember how? I covered that extensively. All the parents who were pushing against that. Dr. Pan, a state senator in California, in the pocket of big pharmaceutical companies, and these parents who had private schools even. They're going to take away the exemption, the religious exemption, the medical exemptions. They did it in New York. And the people who fought them there were the Orthodox Jews. They were telling them, you can't have your private religious school. You're going to have to, we're not going to recognize your religious exemptions in these religious schools. Not going to recognize any medical exemptions either. They got to get the shots. This measles thing is really going around. I've seen measles going around with fully vaccinated people. I've been reporting on this vaccine fraud for years and years. And I remember one particular case in New York, for example, where they had an outbreak of four people. And patient zero and the other three were all vaccinated. They verified that three of the four of them had been vaccinated twice at different times. They'd gotten their booster. You had the booster there? They'd gotten their booster. for MMR. And patient zero had been vaccinated twice. So not only did they get it, but they pass it on. Does that sound familiar? So Susie got the measles and recovered. You send Susie back to school. That's the way we always used to do it. That's the way they did it when Trump was in school. He knows better. You didn't have to get a vaccine for measles. Your parents sent you down to get it from the kids in the neighborhood. Because it was extremely, 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 extremely rare that you would have any serious side effects from measles if you were a child. It could be more serious if you were older. That's why you wanted to get lasting immunity as a child, something that was going to last for your lifetime, and it did. As expected, says Free Thought Project, we see the same thing being outlined for the CDC for measles, mumps, and rubella. CDC clearly states no MMR vaccine is needed, quote, if you have laboratory confirmation of past infection or you had blood tests that show that you are immune to measles, mumps, and rubella. But see, the problem is, as I just pointed out, any training of your immune system that is done by the MMR vaccine doesn't last. Their solution, when they found that people who had been vaccinated multiple times for MMR and still got measles, their solution was, well, we need to do a third shot. We should make that part of the protocol. Same thing you hear Fauci doing now. This is insanity, continuing to do the same thing over and over again and expecting completely different results. No, if you talk about herd immunity was a concept that came out before mass vaccination programs. And herd immunity is dependent on real immunity, on lasting immunity. If you don't have real immunity, if you don't have lasting immunity, and of course, these COVID vaccines, as they call them, don't convey any real immunity. It doesn't even enter into the fact that they haven't lasted. I mean, this is something just a couple of months after you get two shots, you're already sick again in the hospital and dying. So they're not conveying any real immunity to anything. More likely than not, I suspect, and I've said this over and over again, I don't think there's a Delta variant out there. They're not testing for that. That's a very specific test. You know, when you do the PCR test, by the way, the PCR test is not quantitative. So when you had the Oxford University doing the tests saying, well, we got 251 times the viral load of vaccinated patients this year than we did last year when we tested unvaccinated patients. It must be the Delta variant. Well, first of all, I'd like to know what tests they're running because a PCR test is not quantitative. That's why, you know, when this thing blows up whatever they find by a factor of a trillion, it's not quantitative. So they're doing a different test for that. You can do a different test to try to identify different variants of a disease, but of course we have different variants of every kind of virus. And we've never had to have new strains or booster shots for things like smallpox. If it trains your immune system, it's trained. But now they need to have them because it's not working. And if it's not working, you're never going to get herd immunity. That's why now they're saying, well, you know, it's going to be endemic. We're never going to get herd immunity. The vaccines are not going to help you with that. The vaccines will make you sick. The vaccines are the Delta farce, in my opinion. It's the vaccines. It's not a Delta variant that's making people. If you had it, there's multiple strains of smallpox. We've never heard of this kind of nonsense happening. You either had immunity or you don't have immunity. So it's a long-standing foundational understanding of epidemiology, immunology. Herd immunity predates these vaccine campaigns, just like Farr's Law, the curve that they all talk about. That goes back to the 1840s. And so herd immunity is really kind of a restating of that. As Martin Kulldorff writes, vaccinated individuals have a 27 times higher risk of symptomatic COVID infection compared to those with natural immunity from prior COVID disease. So what is different for COVID-19? Why is there a different standard or application of core immunology or core virology principles? Why does none of this stuff apply for COVID? We don't have a curve. We don't have a curve. It's never going to end. We don't have herd immunity. We don't have any of this stuff. As a matter of fact, you know, the vaccine's not training, but we got to pretend that natural immunity is not a thing. The whole purpose of a vaccine is to train your immune system. See, that's the key. The vaccine does not stop the disease. You keep hearing this repeated over and over again in mainstream media. Vaccines were never a therapeutic. A therapeutic stops a disease or a condition or makes it better. A vaccine is simply to train your immune system. If you have an immune system that overcomes a disease, it's trained. It's just that simple. But listen to Fauci as he prattles on about natural immunity. Even the friendly Mockingbird press is starting to scratch their head about what the lies coming out of this guy about natural immunity. He may try to deny natural immunity because he's a natural-born liar.
I want to ask you about people who were previously infected with COVID, who, you and I have discussed this before, have some lingering antibody protections. I understand that vaccination offers stronger protections, but what's your answer when people say...
No, it doesn't. Vaccination does not offer stronger protection.
New federal vaccine mandate have to apply to people that have had COVID, given that they have some protection already.
Yeah, it is true. They do have protection. The one thing that we are not aware of yet, and hopefully we'll get that data, is what the durability of protection is, and looking ahead, whether or not that type of a protection that's induced by natural infection, how that will be against a variety of variants as they arrive. I'm not denying at all that people who get infected and recover have a considerable degree of immunity. We also know, and I think we should not let this pass without saying it, that when you get infected and recover, A, you get a good degree of immunity, but B, when you get vaccinated, you dramatically increase that protection.
That's a lie.
Which is something that's really
just
quite good.
That's a bold-faced lie. You lying piece of filth. The two of them. Well, you know, if you got immunity, you know, they can't deny the fact that your natural immune system stopped a disease. So if you get the vaccine, it's going to be better. It'll be better. You got some degree of immunity, but this is going to really supercharge you. It's going to be much better. You beat the disease, your immune system doesn't forget. The vaccine, on the other hand, does forget. It's got a short-term memory that doesn't last for more than a couple months, if in fact it ever did anything. So these are the lies that they just continue to pile on top of each other. Thomas Massie, the congressman from Kentucky, says he finally admits strong natural immunity. And by the way, the hashtag natural immunity was trending, and then they kind of took it off. Who knows? He finally admits that strong natural immunity from prior infection, but he repeats the lie that he doesn't have the data on durability of natural immunity or its effectiveness against variants. He needs to be fired. If he doesn't have that widely available data in his possession, he's lying. Who knew? Who knew that Fauci needed to be fired? President Trump, who ran his administration like The Apprentice, firing everybody on a regular basis, wouldn't lay a hand on Fauci. Even teased it to his supporters. Everybody, including Trump, knew that Fauci was a liar. He left him in there. He left him in there just before the election. Oh, I don't know. Should I fire him? Yay! Cheer me on, you know. Playing the crowd, literally playing the crowd. Well, we'll have to see. And then after the election, it was off to the sting, off to stop the steal, so he could raise $250 million personally. First $8,000 that anybody gave to that nonsense that he was running, the stop the steal nonsense he's running. First $8,000 went to him. He split some of it with the RNC. And then if you gave more than $8,000, then he would kick that over to the phony investigation. You look at Duke University in North Carolina. At fully vaccinated Duke University, masks are still required outside. Student activities are limited. Dining at indoor facilities is suspended, and on and on and on. And that was a retweet with a comment, that was a comment of a retweet of a professor at Duke who said, in case you're interested, my thoughts on Duke's remarkable, robust COVID protections. Here's a short thread I'm posting this because I've seen a few folks on Twitter arguing that we've done too much. I disagree. I am proud of what Duke is doing. These people are idiots who have bought into this vaccine. They're idiots because they told you from the very beginning. First, I told you they're going to lock you down until they force you to get a vaccine to live your life. Then they came out and said, we're going to force you to get a vaccine to live your life. And they said, well, all right, we'll take that bargain. Let's do it. And oh, by the way, you people out there who don't get jabbed, you're keeping me from living my life. Except the people who got jabbed are still being treated the same way. They still have to wear the mask. They still have to do the social distancing. Everything is still closed. Your obedience to this system buys you nothing. Your appeasement to this corrupt, lying system, Fauci and the rest of these people, these lying doctors and people like Fauci, it buys you absolutely nothing. By the way, I found the clip for the medical resistance. 33,000 doctors and personnel in Canada have refused the poison jab. This is happening all over the world, but big media and big tech are censoring the truth. This is what it looks like. So you can see just a few of these people. Look at this. They've lined up, stood in line in ranks. These are medical professionals. And in Canada alone, 33,000 doctors and professionals who've been on the front line. They've seen people with a vaccine. They've seen people with a so-called virus. Should we pay attention to what they're doing? That speaks reams right there. That, along with the fact that the pharmaceutical companies have absolutely no liability and the medical professionals have absolutely no interest. They will sacrifice their careers, their jobs, their livelihoods rather than take this vaccine for which the pharmaceutical companies have no legal liability. A weatherman of 33 years fired for refusing the COVID vaccine goes out with an epic final statement. His name is his meteorologist, Carl Bonack. He'd served as weatherman at Michigan's WLUC-TV for 33 years, according to the Washington Post. His parent company instituted a vaccine or else policy that went into effect last week. So he quoted New York Yankee icon Lou Gehrig's famous farewell speech when he announced his departure on Facebook. He said, I'm sad. But to borrow a quote from a famous ball player, I'm the luckiest man on the face of the earth because I had a dream as a kid to be a weatherman. That dream came true, and to top it off, I got to broadcast weather for one of the most challenging, beautiful spots in the United States. As an added bonus, the people I broadcast to all across Upper Michigan were so kind and encouraging. But he said, a cloud has fallen over the land of the free. The abrogation of our liberty and freedom under the guise of a pandemic is very disturbing to me. Hopefully, whether you lean right or left, you are concerned about what has occurred in the last year and a half. I just wanted to go about my business, live and let live, and keep my mouth shut. First they came for one group, then another group, and now they're coming for the weathermen, right? If you keep your mouth shut, if you take a live and let live attitude, and let me tell you, this doesn't just apply to the vaccines. We have kept our mouths shut. We've had a live and let live attitude as babies have been murdered for the last 50 years in this country. Then their parts ground up and used to produce these vaccines and medicines. That has metastasized to the extent that we now have murder for hire being conducted by our own government, putting out contracts, $12,000 for this baby part and another part, but then winding up in typical government fashion, paying $60,000 instead of the original $12,000 for fresh, not frozen, baby parts. And then as they come after the whistleblowers who exposed it, in order to protect the murderers, in order to protect the government that is collaborating and working and rewarding and funding these murderers for hire. What they do is they come after the whistleblower. And as part of that trial, I played you the clip one of the people testifying said, yeah, we take the parts out, and I can see the heart still beating as we pull it out. We have remained silent. We have stood by as we've seen that kind of corruption. We have remained silent and stood by as we've had the worst kind of degenerate corruption being pushed on us by the LGBT, being pushed on our children, manipulating them in kindergarten, grooming them, these pedophiles grooming them in kindergarten. We've kept our mouths shut. We've stood silently by. Well, God is not mocked, and he is unleashing the whirlwind on us. But that doesn't mean that we don't fight this. And we don't fight to change our country back. Not a rebuilding, but a restoring. You know, these people talk about rebuild better. They want something completely different. They want a dystopian society. And you've just gotten a preliminary glimpse. You haven't seen anything yet if we don't stand up and fight back against this. But we need to restore it and restore it better than it's been in our lifetime. He said, I want to just go about my business, live and let live, and keep my mouth shut. But this act by the federal government, through corporate America, has brought me to a crossroads. Our way of life, our freedom, our liberty is collapsing before our very eyes. Many of you have taken one of these injections, and that's absolutely your right. It is also my right to choose the medical options that I feel are right for me. I have authority over my body. He said, I've decided against the vaccine option first and foremost because the manufacturers of these injections have absolutely no liability if injury or death occurs after the shot. I asked myself, would I buy brakes for my vehicle if the brake company had no liability, if the brakes failed? No. And just to underscore this, we've now seen Moderna have 2.6 million vials pulled off the market in Japan because they found black contaminants in there that reacted with magnets. And then Pfizer had products removed in Japan because they found white substances floating in them. Neither company will have any liability. As a matter of fact, these contracts that they've made with the sovereign nations say that even if the product is spoiled, even if it is delivered late, you know, they say, well, you contracted to give us this stuff, and you know, we needed it because everybody's dying, but you got it to us late. And so if the politicians try to push that off on the vaccine company, pretending that these vaccines are somehow going to save people, said, no, you can't get any compensation from us for anything that we do. If the product is faulty, if it's late, if it doesn't work, it's not our problem. If it kills people, if it cripples people, not our problem. They had no liability whatsoever for the contaminants that were found in Japan. Neither Pfizer nor Moderna. So he says, so if you ask me, would I buy brakes for my vehicle if the brake company had no liability, if the brakes failed? No. So I certainly will not allow a medicine in my body from a company that does not stand behind its product. However, for a normal, healthy adult, not housed in a nursing home, not suffering from serious comorbidities, the chance of surviving COVID is well over 99%. I will take that chance, and I will go without a shot. I choose not to risk serious side effects. It's always about benefits versus risks. I read you the anonymous statement from a CEO said, look, every medicine that we do is about benefits versus risk. We have to show not that there's no risk to a drug. That's what you see in the Ask Your Doctor commercials. They're constantly telling you very rapidly, you know, may cause a stroke, heart attack, death, but don't worry about it because it's great. Those are rare. Those are rare. So we do the risk versus benefits. And he said, and that's what your physician does. That's what you do. You calculate the risks versus benefits. When these people tell you there is no risk to these COVID shots, oh, then you know yet another time, another clear indication that they are lying to you, big time. So he says, I choose not to take those risks. It's time to wake up to what is occurring here in America and across the world. We're being bludgeoned with fear. And as you can see in Australia, people there are being bludgeoned with bludgeons. I believe in an effort to control us. eminent doctors, virologists, epidemiologists who post facts contradicting the official accepted narrative regarding COVID are being censored. Some are losing their jobs. It's time to honor those who served. For me, I honor them by saying enough. I have the right to choose. We all do. If we do nothing, we will lose that fight. He said a distillation of a portion of Jefferson's masterpiece, the Declaration of Independence, says, when tyranny becomes law, resistance becomes duty. Those who love America and the freedom and liberty that it stands for must speak up. Hopefully, it's not too late. How many more times are we going to see what is essentially a recapitulation of what Pastor Martin Niemöller said? Well, they came for that group. I didn't do anything. I wasn't a part of that group. They came for another group. I wasn't a part of that group. Then they came for me, and there was nobody left. That's what they're doing. So the White House, according to the Babylon Bee, says we must continue admitting unvaccinated immigrants to replace all the workers who got fired for being unvaccinated. That's basically what they're doing. We have to continue admitting unvaccinated immigrants in the country. We've got to use them to replace all the workers who got fired for not being vaccinated. By the way, and I'll go back and say this, you know, the middle of the summer, people were saying, look at this executive order number 83 coming out of the Tennessee governor. It looks like, you know, he's activating the National Guard. And I said, read the order. All the things that he's doing in there is he's sweeping aside the requirements for people to be medical, to practice medicine. They're saying, we'll take students, we'll take National Guard, we'll take anybody. We just need some warm bodies, you know, we can put some white coats or something on them. You know, dress them up like doctors and nurses. They knew this was coming. The Republicans knew this was coming. See, that's, the issue was not the camps. The camps have been planned since last summer. The Green Zone documents from the CDC. No, this was, and we saw it with Governor Kemp in Georgia, with Governor Lee in Tennessee, and many others. These Republican governors knew this was coming, and so they did executive orders or legislation or whatever to push aside the requirements so they could bring students in, so they could bring retired people back without any of the vetting or licensing that they would normally require for medical professionals, because they knew they were going to have mass firings of people who had seen this so-called pandemic, who had seen this so-called vaccine and said, I'm not having anything to do with it. They were complicit in this. They had foreknowledge in this. That's the thing you ought to be upset about. Going back to the Babylon Bee. Jen Psaki, quote, our workforce is suffering. All these businesses need more workers, and we just told them to fire everybody who hasn't gotten the vaccine. So Mexico's sending us thousands of workers every day to replace those crazy white right-wing conspiracy theorists who won't get the vaccine. And yes, these new workers aren't vaccinated either, but they're not wearing MAGA hats, so that's an upgrade. Yeah, exactly. Oregon school staffer decided to protest the vaccine mandate by wearing blackface and dressing as Rosa Parks. Sometimes, this is not the Babylon Bee. This is not the this. Somebody actually did this. You gotta stop and think about how what you do is going to be received. I mean, she had a point, and I played for you the angry encounter in New York City in a pizza restaurant, a black man and his family being kicked out. He says, we fought for this. You're going to kick me out because of this? And the guy said, well, it's order, government orders. You know, I've got to do what I'm told. Just like the uniformed thugs in Australia. The businesses will do the same thing to you. And so he was protesting that. He was talking and making the comparisons to Rosa Parks. But, you know, if you want to put blackface on, this person put iodine on their face to darken it. and goes to an elementary school in blackface, dressed up as Rosa Parks. Presumably this is a woman. It would be even more ridiculous if it was a man. But that is not the way to do this. In the same way that if you want to protest government tyranny right now, even though it is your right to redress your grievances peacefully, and if you want to do it at the capitals, that is your right under the First Amendment. But understand the First Amendment is dead. Understand these people are looking for an excuse to turn you into the provocateurs or to sell that to the compliant media that will help them to sell that lie. So don't go somewhere where you can be accused of instituting a violent attack, and don't resort to this kind of nonsense. The employee was removed from the location. They put the employee on administrative leave. And then the Newburgh Public Schools virtue signaled and said, "We condemn all expressions of racism." Racism is dead now, right? Now we have people who are kicked out of the lunchroom facility, kicked off of the bus, not even put in the back of the bus, not even put down on the other end of the lunchroom counter. No, you're just kicked out. It's not racism. It's vaccinism, right? Maybe we need to start talking about that. Vaccinism. I oppose vaccinism. Because it is a system of beliefs. You know, you can talk about a vaccine, but if you have a, you know, we talk about science. Science is one thing. Science is empirical. Science invites debate. It invites skepticism. But when you have scientism, that is something of a religion. And so, you know, when you have this religion focused around the worship of vaccines and all things Fauci, I think we should call that vaccinism. And it's vaccinism that we have to resist. Jordan Peterson says it is a fundamental right to not get vaccinated. He had a discussion on a podcast with a Canadian journalist, Rex Murphy. They were talking about Justin Trudeau, and we'll talk about the election, what went wrong there because he got reelected. Justin Trudeau and the election that should never have been. And so you have Jordan Peterson and this other guy. They said, all the money that is going out and not being accounted for, Parliament not exercising its functions. Is it possible the Trudeau government is really, really worried that when the pandemic slows down, I think there's a fear that if he, Trudeau, remained in the minority and the press could get off that one topic of COVID, they would start to look at the record of that spending. Oh, yes. He's on to something here. He doesn't quite get there, but he's on to something. As I've said, as Catherine Austin Fitz has said, Gerald Celente has said it, this whole thing is a misdirection. It's bad enough, the trillions of dollars that have been spent and the crony capitalism, you know, just as we look at Trump's PPP, that went, more than 50% of it went to less than 5% of the businesses, and they were the big businesses. The banks worked together with the big businesses to steal the money that was supposedly going to the small businesses to help them out. But it's much worse than that. It's much worse than trillions of dollars last year and trillions of dollars this year and then trillions of dollars of taxes being put on by Biden. We'll get to that in a moment here as well. It's much worse than that. These people are pumping money into weird places like the repo market I'd never heard of. They were pumping phenomenal amounts of money into that in the fall of 2019. And I started seeing these numbers, and I said, look at this. They put in, I think it was like $90 billion. And I thought, how does that compare to the gross national product to some of the countries? And it's like, you know, that particular one, if I remember that number correctly, they had dumped into this obscure market, the repo market. Most people don't know anything about it. I still don't really know that much about it. It's just that they were putting in tremendous amounts of money into that, and that particular dumping was equivalent to the annual gross domestic product of Puerto Rico. Then a couple of days later, they dumped in a much, much larger amount. I said, wow, look at that. And I looked it up, and it was equivalent to the gross domestic product of Switzerland for a year, the 20th largest economy in the world. And they kept doing it. Over and over, they put in trillions of dollars into this thing. And then this pandemic comes along, and they start putting even more trillions of dollars and passing it around to their friends, and they have plausible deniability. It's not them, it's the pandemic. And so what Jordan Peterson and this other guy is saying, well, you know, I think they're worried because if this pandemic were to slow down and people were to look around, they would realize that they've been played. They'd realize that this is the greatest bank robbery of all time. And it's the central banks that are doing the robbery, along with the other banks that work with them. And so they've got to keep this ball rolling. And they're going to keep it rolling until they burn everything down in society. If you're going to be fighting in the streets to try to find food, you're not going to be asking questions to audit the Fed. And yet we're seeing massive corruption coming out about Jerome Powell and others. So they have to keep this going. They went on to talk about a little aspect of this election. Aaron O'Toole, they said, the so-called conservative, ceded the conceptual territory so that half of the debate was taken up on climate change and reconciliation. And only a quarter of it was on affordability. That means the economy. That means the entire business of governance. Is climate change really that crucial a crisis right now? Jordan Peterson. I think it's one of the things that hurt Larry Elder, frankly. I don't think that he could have won with the media and George Soros buying commercials and lying and everything. But, you know, it really doesn't help his integrity when for years he's told the truth about climate change. And then he takes a powder and says, oh, no, it's real. I don't want to oppose any of this stuff. Climate change is just another label for this great reset that they're pushing on us with the pandemic. So you can't really trust somebody who says, I'm going to stand against this pandemic after they've just caved on climate change. It's one and the same agenda. It's just a different justification for the same details, for the same reset of society into a technological serfdom. The reporter that was talking with Jordan Peterson went on to say he believes the government has hurted Canadians by using the pandemic as a tool to do so. The demands of the lockdown and restrictions have conditioned Canadians to give up on normal democratic functions. Quote, the pandemic in certain ways is almost a preparatory course. If you have a good enough cause, you can build up the administrative state to the heights that have never been seen before. Peterson said, when he's talking about the vaccine, how it's being used on people, how it's being used to shut down the economy, he said, I'm vaccinated, by the way. I'm not saying that because I'm proud of it or anything. Just that's what I did. People don't want to do it. There are people in my family who don't want to get vaccinated, and that's your right. It is a fundamental right. He says, I would say it's guaranteed by the UN. The UN is not going to stand for your rights. Federal government's not going to stand for your rights. The states aren't going to stand for your rights. That's not a projection. That's not a theory. That's not a prediction. That is historical fact, especially this last year. Certainly the UN is not going to stand for you. The UN is at the center of all this stuff. The UN is pushing the Great Reset, the UN 2030 agenda. So I was absolutely disappointed, let's just say that, to see that Jordan Peterson had no discernment about that either. They went on to talk about fact that they'd excluded the one person who was pro-freedom, Maxime Bernier, from the leaders' debate. They said it was stunning. But, of course, this is something that I've seen for the last 30 years. That's why I was not surprised to see corporations used to destroy the First Amendment, to destroy the freedom of the press, to destroy the freedom of speech of individuals on social media. That whole idea that we're going to have the debates run by, you know, at the state level, it was run not by the League of Women Voters, but it was run in North Carolina by an association of the press. And, of course, the press didn't want to be bothered with having three people who were qualified and on the ballot. They just want to have the two, the Republican and the Democrat. After you had Ross Perot in the presidential debates, you may recall in the 90s, they came up with the Presidential Commission. They called it a private organization. But it is completely controlled by the Republican and Democrat parties, and they make sure they're not going to have any third-party debates in there. And so we've had a lot of candidates who have been on the ballot in all 50 states, and that is no mean feat. That takes a lot of time, a lot of volunteers, and a lot of cash to do that, to collect the signatures and get them validated. It costs money to get them validated. You jump through all those extra hoops that the Republicans and Democrats don't have to jump through. Guess what? You don't get in the debate. That's why I've said all of this stuff about one particular company. You know, they want to focus on Dominion or Smartmatic or whatever. That is a misdirection, if ever there was one. This corruption begins by keeping people off the ballot. This corruption begins by keeping people off of the debates. This corruption begins by shutting down your speech on social media. They're focusing on one tiny part of the tail end of the process that is corrupt from beginning to end. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back. I've got some more news about vaccine passports, toxic medication. Interestingly enough, Pfizer has just decided that its vaccine is good for kids as young as 5 years old. We don't even have the pretense anymore that we have some federal regulators. You just have these corporations come out and say, well, that's what we want to do, and it's going to happen. We'll be right back. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the heart of rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
All right, and if you go to the David Knight Show, I just reiterate, you'll see all the different places where we are. We do need to update it because we've been able to add it to some additional places. But what supports this program are your contributions. And you can see the gas gauge there. I think we're right about half right now for the month of our budget. I understand times are tough. If you could afford, let's say, a cup of coffee, that would do it. Our view counts have really gone up, especially on podcasts. We have two different podcast platforms, and there's quite a few downloads on a daily basis. But it's a very small number of people who support, and they have been very generous with us. But if you would like to sign up at Subscribestar, you can sign up for a $5 a month contribution. That really does help. You can also leave tips at Subscribestar, but of course you can send money. We've got a post office box there. We have not Venmo or PayPal anymore, but we have Zelle, and you're able to, and we have the links to all that sort of thing, as well as Bitcoin. If you want to, Bitcoin has gone down, but that's going to be going up and down along with the stock market like everything else. I mean, there's not anything that's going to be stable at any point, but we are really close, I think, to turning the corner on public opinion, and we need to continue to press this. And as much as I want to press resistance, I want to push back against taking the bait and going full-on violence with these people. I think defensive actions are absolutely warranted, but you better make sure it's properly understood. But there's plenty of things that we could do that we have not done, and we have to get together collectively to fight for individual liberty. To give you an idea of where we are in terms of vaccine passports, more of them popping up in the most absurd places, as well as shortages, we have vaccine passports now in Austria for skiing. No more shushing without your vaccine passport, and mask rules. So you have to have vaccination or proof of a negative test and wear your masks if you want to go snow skiing down a hill. That's how insane this has become. WND has an article. Actually, it's research that was done by Cheryl Atkinson. She's done a report about how we were lied to about the COVID deaths, which I said from the very beginning. Just unbelievable to see this, but it was the same rodeo. We've seen this rodeo over and over and over again on an annual basis, Fauci and the CDC trying to create panic in order to get people to take a flu shot. This time, they were able to coerce people into doing it. And it was a movement unlike any that we'd seen before, but it was still the same tactic. And so when you have people, and I've mentioned it before, I'll never forget, as Mike Adams was given the microphone over and on a daily basis by Alex Jones because he's pushing fear and people were going out and buying storable food. That's all it was. Fear to get you to buy storable food and supplements. And so as we were having that argument back and forth, Mike Adams and I, he goes on one day, I'm leaving, and he's got the chart up from the CDC. He said, look, we got more people dying of COVID than from cancer and from heart disease and all this other kind of stuff. It's like, how many times are we going to have this? And I don't believe that he was that stupid. It was purely economic, lying to people. So, Kristen Riley died with a gunshot wound in her head last year. And her husband, after allegedly shooting his wife in the head, turned the gun on himself and committed suicide. But Colorado officials said they both died from COVID. And this is part of this report from Cheryl Atkinson. She talked to the coroner there in Grand County, Colorado, where the two deaths happened. And the coroner said, I had a homicide-suicide the end of November 2020. And the very next day it showed up on the state website as COVID deaths. And there were gunshot wounds. And I questioned that immediately because I'd not even signed off on the death certificate yet. And the state was already reporting them as COVID deaths. We've just had Drudge Report and a lot of mainstream media now. You may have seen the mainstream media reports saying, look at this. COVID deaths have now surpassed the famous 1918 flu. That's the benchmark. And they want you to believe that we've had more people dying of this pandemic in the last year than died of the 1918 flu in order to try to justify what they have done to us. To kill the middle class, to kill small business, to kill our jobs, to kill our liberty, to kill the Constitution and all of our rights. They want to try to justify that. But they've been lying about this from day one. We've talked about how, you know, if you get a positive test, if you die within the next 30 days, you died from COVID. But if you get the vaccine and you die within 14 days of your second jab, you did not die from the vaccine. Probably died from COVID. So the coroner explained that nowhere in the death certificate was COVID mentioned. He said, I didn't write anything about COVID. We've had situations here in Texas where a person died from driving their motorcycle and crashing it. And when the coroner was questioned here in Texas, the guy said, well, could have been COVID, could have been COVID. But he was the one who put that lie down. This county coroner in Colorado didn't do it. He said, we had a homicide and a suicide. It had nothing to do with COVID. He said the case, however, had nothing on two later Grand County deaths. Again, same county, same coroner, that popped up on the state's COVID count. He said, in that particular case, the people were still alive. County commissioners asked the state to correct its reporting, and eventually some adjustment was made. But James Crusoe, the chief medical examiner in Denver, said the same issue was found statewide. He told Cheryl Atkinson, I think early on the people signing the death certificates probably were doing it accurately, but at some level, maybe the state level, maybe the federal level, they started padding the numbers, didn't they? He said there's a possibility they were cross-referencing COVID tests and that people who tested positive for COVID were listed as COVID-related deaths, regardless of the true cause of death. We've seen that before, but I think there's just outright fraud. Outright fraud. Over almost a quarter of COVID patients in England are being treated for something else, and we have seen this over and over again in the U.S. I know people personally. You know, the first thing they do, and I reported the EMS driver who said, you know, we had a guy who's having a heart attack. I've never seen this before. Callous disregard for his well-being. Instead of taking him in to address the cardiac arrests, they take him in and do a PCR test. Why? Because the money that Trump would reward them with, those rules from Trump, and that happened last year under Trump. You know, you get the bonus, you get the percentage added to all of that. People have gone in with broken limbs, they test them for COVID. If they test positive, oh, we got you now. Only 4,721 patients, 77%, were primarily being treated for the virus, with the remaining 1,425 receiving care for other illnesses or injuries, wrote the Daily Mail. They could include patients who've had a fall or even new mothers who tested positive after giving birth. So this is going on everywhere, but this is what it's going to look like, and you're going to see a lot more of this. You know, we've had shortages of toilet paper. We've had shortages of ammunition. We got shortages of cars. We got shortages of everything. We got shortages of cars because we've had semiconductor production impacted by this. But it's the transportation as well. You know, we got bottlenecks in the transportation. People can't get shipping out. So now we got restaurants are starting to remove crab from the menus due to skyrocketing prices. This is a story from Zero Hedge. They said, everybody knows about crab cakes and crab meat in Maryland. The price per pound has gone up from $21 a pound. Yesterday, it was $52 a pound, which is astronomical. So a lot of us had to take crab products off our menus. So I guess, you know, if we tell this to Biden, if we complain about it, to Jen Psaki, she'd probably say, well, let them eat crab cakes. Except you can't afford to eat crab cakes any more than the people at the time of the French Revolution could afford to eat regular cake. Whether that story is true or not, it is illustrative of the elitism that we saw in the royals at the time of the French Revolution and what we see now with the federals. Is there much difference between a royalty and a federalty? That's what we should call these people. That's what they really are. Chicken wings, pre-pandemic, were about $45 to $50 for a case. Last week, it was $196 a case. I mean, we're talking about four times higher. Four times higher. Over the weekend, crab cake prices at one place, it said it was raised by $4, but that still wasn't enough to cover costs. She said, we raised it to $6, but we're not losing money. We're just barely breaking even at that point. They said that the shortage of crab meat, it's a very short supply. The quantity is not there. The quality is not there. And they're asking for enormous prices, said Pappas Restaurant Group CEO, Steve Pappas. They said if we raise the price by the same amount that crab meat has gone up, it would be $60 a crab cake. Right now, it's $25.99 for two sides and for one crab cake. He said crab meat costs between $50 to $60 a pound. I think there is a shortage of workers, a shortage of transportation. Just like many other industries right now, it's hard to find products of any sort. So what are you doing? Well, you want to create mass unemployment by shoving a vaccine mandate down everybody's throat and threatening businesses with a $14,000 a person fine. That's the answer from Biden. Let them eat crab cakes. Said some websites are selling the meat for up to $121 a pound. Shocking, considering that prices were in the $19 to $30 range for the past half decade, for the past 50 years. The highest it's been is one quarter of what it is right now. That was the highest. So it is yet another sign of hyperinflation that we're seeing, and food prices especially. In Pennsylvania, they're rationing alcohol because that's also busted. It's hardly anything that you can find that isn't affected by this. Again, they have done everything they can to cripple our supply lines, to cripple our society. They're trying to burn us to the ground. They want to take everything from us, make us desperately poor, so that we're struggling to find food and survive, so that we don't come after them. That's the purpose. It's just that simple. It's not that complicated. I haven't been able to get Bullet Bourbon for a month. Jack Daniels is out for a while, but now it's back in. People know there is a shortage, so bar owners are overstocking. That's why I put a limit on it. But, I mean, we're seeing that with, again, ammunition, you name it. They said we've dealt with shortages before, but now there seems to be one thing after the other. We went through this with chicken wings, and we went through it with ketchup packets, and then plastic cups. Businesses were having a hard time finding employees. The combination of all this is really hampering recovery for small businesses. You know, when we had in 2020 the first wave of this, they went through and they said, well, these types of activities are going to be essential and these types are non-essential. So we're going to shut down all the businesses that are non-essential, are going to be the services, the service businesses that are being offered by middle-class entrepreneurs on Main Street. Because already, you know, retail, manufacturing, all that stuff, that has been taken over by the big box retailers. Manufacturing has been taken over and then shipped abroad to China. But the other stuff has been taken over by Wall Street as well, the retail aspect of it. So the only thing left to the middle class really was to set up something where they could do restaurants or they could do hair salons or barbershops, that type of thing. So they went after those and shut them down. That didn't have nearly the effect. I mean, it crippled a lot of people, crippled the middle class. But as we saw in the UK, when they put out their application to do contact tracing, they had about a third of the people download this free application. And what it would do is it would look to see if other people had this app on their phone. It would record where you went, and it would do a cross-reference on people who were in proximity to you if you got a positive test. And so if you got a positive test, it would notify all the people that had been in contact with you within a certain period of time. They would get a ping on their app and say, you got to go into timeout, essentially. And so they had what they called a ping-demic. And that was the beginning of the summer. That hurt the UK far more than any of the arbitrary lockdowns of non-essential people, because it was kind of random. And it was taking massive numbers of people out, and they had to quarantine for 10 days. But when they put in this vaccine mandate, understand, this is going to be far more devastating. This is going to be 20 to 30% of the people just kicked out everywhere. This is designed to destroy our countries and our economies worldwide. 2 years ago, they said I paid $1.47 for a glass bottle. Now I'm paying $2.50. I paid $1.47 before. The supply chain is broken for sure for us small guys. And now suppliers are not warehousing as much as they used to. Every part of the supply chain has problems, said the president of Hola Spirits in York, Pennsylvania, a vodka producer. But again, that's just one industry, one product. This is happening to everything. University is kicking out students. Everybody is, it's like murder-suicide from an economic standpoint, what we see happening here. We have the government, the bureaucrats, and the people who are running these seminaries of Satan that we call universities, they've been on a murder-suicide kick for a long time with our students and our society. You know, selling Marxism, selling perversion. And now they just, this is the final stages of it. They're just kicking people out of the university at LSU if they're not compliant with the vaccine rules. There's an excellent article from John Rappaport, and it's kind of a change of topic, but it's not really a change of topic. How the CIA hid their MKUltra mind control program. And you know, when I talk to people about this, and I warn people like I did 556 days ago, a lot of times, you know, people, if they're polite, they'll just kind of look at me and kind of, well, that's interesting. You know, they don't agree. They can't believe it. They can't believe that our government would do the types of things that our government is now doing. Some of them have a hard time believing it, even as it's happening. And I've said before, you have to understand the nature of these people that we're dealing with. When I tell people this, that I just meet casually, you know, meet them in a some kind of a social thing outside of work. They don't know who I am or where I'm coming from. They haven't heard my programs. They've just been watching CNN and Fox News and things like that. They're coming at it from that perspective. They cannot believe what I'm telling them about the nature of these people in power and what they've been doing since World War II. And I've mentioned before, it's kind of like Ted Bundy. Very intelligent, very articulate, nice-looking guy. Every girl fell for him. You know, he could charm his way in, take them out, rape and murder them. Because they just couldn't understand that somebody who was that charming and that nice and that intelligent and that good-looking could be so evil inside. And that's what we see with the politicians. If you look at what they do, what these psychopaths do, and let me tell you, the CIA is filled with psychopaths. John Kiriakou, the only CIA guy I trust, because he went to jail for his principles, he said, yeah, they're looking for sociopaths, and they want them to get right up to the line of psychopaths, and hopefully not a little bit over, but a lot of them are really over the line of psychopaths. If you don't understand the nature of these people, and you don't understand what they are capable of doing, you are just as vulnerable to them as a society as a woman was to Ted Bundy. And what makes it even worse is you don't understand the technology that they have. So people underestimate the evil of these people, and they underestimate the technology that they have. And that's why we're losing this battle. Yes, I know, God is in control, and that's ultimately why we're losing this battle. It's his judgment. But I'm just saying that from a regular standpoint, you need to understand this. And so I think this is a very important op-ed piece from John Rappaport. He's done some excellent research in this last year, exposing frauds, exposing the fraud of the variant, exposing the fraud of the PCR test. In fact, they've got 59 different tests that are all looking for different things. They synthesized some mRNA. They took some partial bits of mRNA, some of it. They took some whole bits of mRNA, but they said, we didn't have an isolated COVID-19 virus. We didn't have a SARS-CoV-2. So we just kind of assumed it's probably like this, the same way they assume every year. Well, you know, we think we're going to have this kind of flu, so let's make the vaccines for that kind of flu. They just assumed, since they said they didn't have the SARS-CoV-2 virus, they just made it up. And the FDA document, as they're talking about the fact that they're going to come up with a different PCR test at the end of the year. You know, we're going to have a PCR test, they said, that's going to evaluate COVID, and it's also going to evaluate different strains of flu. That's why we're changing it. But if you read the fine print, what they're saying is, we can't evaluate these different tests against each other because we got 59 of them and they're all testing for something different. So there's no way that we can say that one is more accurate than the other. This is the way the PCR tests are. So besides manufacturing it, they're looking for 59 different things. Very important research from John Rappaport. But here's what he has to say about the CIA, this MK Ultra mind control program, and what that has to do with this pandemic. He said, back in the early 1990s, I spoke with John Marks, author of The Search for the Manchurian Candidate. This was the book in 1979 that helped to expose the existence and the range of the infamous CIA MK Ultra program. Marks related the following facts to me. He had originally filed many Freedom of Information requests, FOIA requests, for documents connected to the CIA's mind control program, and he got nothing back. Finally, as if to play a joke on him, somebody at the CIA sent him 10 boxes of financial and accounting records. The attitude was, well, here, see what you can find. See what you can do with this. John Rappaport said, I've seen some of those records. They are very boring reading. But Marks went through them. And lo and behold, he found he could piece together MK Ultra projects based on the funding data. Eventually, he assembled enough information to begin naming names. He conducted interviews. The shape of MK Ultra swam into view. And so he wrote his book, Search for the Manchurian Candidate. He told me that three important books had been written by MK Ultra, and they all stemmed from those 10 boxes of CIA financial records. There was his own book. Then there was Operation Mind Control by Walter Boart. The Mind Manipulators by Alan Shefflin and Edward Upton. He said a CIA official told him the following in 1962, after 10 years of mind control experiments. He said the whole program had been shifted over to another internal CIA department, the Office of Research and Development, ORD. And by the way, 1962, that was about the same time that a DARPA psychologist, J.C.R. Licklider, came up with the idea of the Intergalactic Computer Network. They shortened it to Internet. But it was always a psychological project. They like to say that it was some kind of a hitchhiker's guide to the galaxy. You know? But it was really more of a way to psychologically manipulate people. And when it became technologically practical, when bandwidth and switching equipment reached that position and started getting close to it in the 1990s, that's when the CIA openly created a venture capital firm, and you started having all these companies like Facebook and Google that now control the internet. They started having all these CIA and NSA and other intelligence community organizations putting people on venture capital boards that were funding those who would be competing with each other to become the masters of the universe. Oh yeah, they wanted to have a competition, but they pre-selected who the participants in the contest were going to be, in the same way they do for politics. And then these people fight each other tooth and nail, and so you say, well, this is a real competition. Yeah, yeah, but they've already selected what they want as a final outcome by the people they allow to participate, just like in politics. But going back to this story from John Rappaport, MK Ultra, he said the ORD had 100 boxes of information on their MK Ultra work, and there was no way under the sun, Marx was told, that he was ever going to get his hands on any of that. It was over. It didn't matter how many FOIA requests he filed, it was done. The door was shut. Goodbye. The CIA went darker than it ever had before. No leaks of any kind would be permitted. In case there's any doubt about it, the idea of relying on the CIA to admit what it had done in the mind control area, what it is doing, and what it will do, should be put to bed by John Mark's statements. The CIA has always been and will continue to be a rogue agency. As a matter of fact, you go back and you look at the Church hearings and you look at the Pike hearings. They were done in the early 1970s. And it was to correct the abuses of the CIA and the NSA in terms of surveillance of people domestically. That was a key thing. That was far more important than the attempts to assassinate Castro. But that's what they redirected everybody to. They'd been doing that kind of surveillance against the American people from their inception. Going back to MKUltra. To give you an idea how far the CIA, the U.S. military, and its allied academics will go in MKUltra research, he says, here's what I wrote in 1995 about several human experiments. My information was based on three key books I mentioned above, as well as Martin Lee's classic, Acid Dreams. Dr. Robert Heath of Tulane University, as early as 1955, working for the Army, gave patients LSD while he had electrodes implanted deep inside their brains. Oh, but it gets worse. In the mid-1950s, Paul Hawk, M.D., a man who had become commissioner of mental hygiene for the state of New York, then a laborer in the field for the CIA, gave a pseudo-neurotic schizophrenic patient mescaline. The patient had a heaven-and-hell journey on the compound, but Hawk followed this up with a transorbital lobotomy. Hawk also gave a patient LSD and a local anesthetic, and then proceeded to remove pieces of his cerebral cortex, asking at various moments whether the patient's perceptions were changing. Do you understand this? You know, you don't have any pain in your brain, right? Brain doesn't have any pain sensors. So this guy puts him on LSD. He gives him a local anesthetic, but, you know, when he starts cutting on the brain doesn't feel the pain. And he just starts cutting away pieces of his brain as he's interviewing him. Now, what happens when I pull this on? Do you feel anything now? You got any different perception? Can you still move your arms? Okay, let's cut off another piece here. When I talk about these people, like Fauci, like the University of Pittsburgh, like Planned Parenthood, like the FDA, who are doing these transhumanist experiments, who are using cannibal medicine to produce the pharmaceutical products that they put out there now, these are people devoid of conscience, and when I say that they're like Joseph Mengele, I am not engaging in hyperbole at all. At all. I mean, they brought people like him in as part of Operation Paperclip. This is how evil these people are. They absolutely don't care. Do you understand how this plays in to what we see coming out now by the FDA? By the NIH, by Pfizer, by Moderna, by Johnson & Johnson, who ran the opioid epidemic for billions of dollars and then managed to weasel their way out with the politicians that they bought at every level. This is why that whistleblower Project Veritas said it is just pure evil at the top. No matter how much damage they do to people, they're going to continue on with this agenda. They're going to continue on. They're going to have to be physically removed. And so people need to understand the history of mind control and psychiatry are interwoven, how the madmen and the murderers within these professions are content to use torture in the name of science. And then he quotes psychiatrist Dr. Peter Bregan, who said, before World War II in America, organized psychiatry had been sterilizing tens of thousands of Americans. For a time in California, you couldn't be discharged from a state hospital unless you were sterilized. In Virginia, the retarded were targeted. American advocates of sterilization went to Berlin to help the Nazis plan their sterilization program. These Americans reassured the Germans that they would meet no opposition in America in sterilizing their mentally and physically unfit, quote-unquote, citizens. While the murder of mental patients was going full swing in Germany, knowledgeable American psychiatrists and neurologists didn't want to be left out. In 1942, the American Psychiatric Association held a debate about whether to sterilize or to murder low IQ retarded citizens, as they call them, children, should say, when they reached the age of five. Those were the only two alternatives in their debate, sterilization or death. And they decided in favor of murder. The official journal of the American Psychiatric Association published an editorial in which it chose murder, euthanasia, they called it. In the American Journal of Psychiatry, 1942, volume 99, page 141 to 143, it said psychiatrists would have to muster their psychological skills to keep patients, or rather parents, from feeling guilty about agreeing to have their children killed. The psychiatrist, and by the way, it was last July that you had a Yale study that you can find on the National Institute of Health website. I read it at the time. They war gamed how they were going to use psychological manipulation to get people to take the vaccine in every way possible. And at the same time, the New England Journal of Medicine said, and we'll run it through the corporations. We'll coerce people through the corporations, but here's how we're going to manipulate people. The guilt trips, the lies that we're going to put on them to get the vaccine. Oh, they've wargamed this out in so many different ways for so long. And again, we're talking about what was going on in the middle of the 20th century. The psychiatrists who later went to work for the CIA and the MKUltra program were devoid of conscience. Any experiment was a good experiment. Human beings were made to be useful subjects. And then we get to the story about what was the book was called Acid, something or the other. This is the book about what they did to musicians. During those years, it was common knowledge that musicians were busted for drug use, were shipped, or they volunteered to go to Lexington, Kentucky. It was being run by the U.S. Health Department as a drug treatment hospital. And as Rappaport says, a partial list of the reported hundreds of jazz musicians who went to the Lexington facility, they called it Lex for short, Red Rodney, Sonny Rollins, Chet Baker, Sonny Stitt, Howard McGee, Elvin Jones, Zoot Sims, Lee Morgan, and on and on. It also is reported that Ray Charles had been sent there at one point in time, William Burroughs, Peter Lorre, Sammy Davis Jr. It was supposed to be a rehab center, but it was something else too. It was used by the CIA, one of its MKUltra centers, for experimentation on inmates. The doctor in charge of the mind control program was Harris Isbell. Astonishingly, Isbell was, at the same time, a member of the FDA's advisory committee on the abuse of depressant and stimulant drugs. Isbell gave LSD and other psychedelics to inmates at Lex. Isbell worked at Lex from 1940s through 1963. It's reported that in one experiment, he gave LSD to seven inmates for 77 consecutive days at four times the normal dosage. To induce inmates to join these MKUltra drug experiments, they were offered the drug of their choice, which in most cases was heroin. And he said Lexington was a main stop for drying out for a lot of these New York jazz musicians. How many of them were taken into the MKUltra programs? In the book Acid Dreams, that's why I couldn't remember Dreams, Acid Dreams, he said it became an open secret that if the heroin supply got tight on the street, you could always commit yourself to Lexington, where heroin and morphine were doled out as payment if you volunteered for the LSD experiments. In June 15th, 1999, Counterpunch article titled CIA's Sidney Gottlieb, Pusher, Assassin, and Pimp. U.S. official poisoner dies. It contained these quotes on Dr. Isbell. Gottlieb also funded the experiments of Dr. Harris Isbell. Isbell ran the Center for Addiction Research in Lexington, Kentucky. Passing through Isbell's center was a captive group of human guinea pigs in the form of a steady stream of black heroin addicts. More than 800 different chemical compounds were shipped from Gottlieb to Lexington for testing on Isbell's patients. In other Gottlieb-funded experiment at the center, Isbell had 9 black males strapped to tables, injected them with psilocybin, mushrooms, essentially, inserted rectal thermometers, had lights shone into their eyes to measure their pupil dilation, and had their joints whacked to test neural reactions. If you think these experiments are so extreme they bear no resemblance to modern psychiatry, think again. Thorazine, the first so-called antipsychotic drug, was researched on the basis of its ability to make humans profoundly quiescent and passive. Electroshock and lobotomy are straight-out torture techniques that also destroy parts of the brain. SSRI antidepressants increase violent behavior, including homicide. By the way, these rashes of shootings that we had at the time that Obama was pushing a lot of gun control, whenever you see these mass shootings, you would always find that these people were on SSRIs. And what would really happen with this is that if typically they would have these events where they did murder or suicide when their dosage was changed. As one woman who specialized in following these interviewed pointed out, it's very much like what happens when you're diving and you go to a certain depth. If you come up too quickly, you get the bends. And so what happens is the most dangerous thing about the SSRIs is increasing or decreasing the dosage. That's when people have these events. And they basically just blank out. They don't know what they're doing. One event, a student who was on SSRIs showed up in class with a rifle. He pointed at the class, and he pointed at himself, pointed at the class. Eventually, they got it away from him. They put him in the hospital. He didn't, fortunately, hurt anybody or himself, but he had absolutely no recollection of the event. So these are the types of things that we can thank the pharmaceutical industry for, the psychological industry for, the CIA for. Among the many documented effects, Ritalin can also induce hallucinations and paranoia. So with all these effects are part and parcel of the original and ongoing MKUltra. But for now, the whole population, says John Rappaport, via psychiatry, is now being included in the experiment, which is one reason why the right to refuse medication must be protected and expanded, including, of course, the right to refuse vaccines. For example, the COVID vaccine. And I'll just say, as you look at this, again, in Revelation, and these great men of the world repented not of their murders and of their pharmakia, their sorcery is the way it's translated, but the pharmaceuticals and the psychological manipulations of these evil people who have their consciences burned with a hot iron. They're not repenting of it. But that is what we're seeing right now at the center of this, at the center of it, or at the top, if you will. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Past to track and control us. their Commons Project, to make sure the commoners own nothing, and the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
All right, let's take a look at the headline news on this Tuesday, the 21st of September, year of our Lord, 2021. And, of course, I guess at the top of the list is Justin Trudeau remaining in power. He had hoped by calling an early election, he thought he was riding on the coattails of a successful move against COVID, but that wasn't true. Nevertheless, he was able to essentially retain where they are, and the Conservatives stayed where they were. Trudeau's Liberals had 156 seats, one less than they had in the last election of 2019, 14 short of what they needed for a majority to control everything. And the Conservatives stayed exactly where they were. Nevertheless, what Trudeau says is, you're sending us back to work with a clear mandate to get Canada through this pandemic. So he claims that he's got a mandate, even though he doesn't have a majority, even though nothing really changed. So he's got a mandate to mandate everything for you. I see your mandate, and I raise your mandate, and I will reciprocate your mandate. And so here's what you're going to do. He said, I hear you when you say that you want to get back to the things that you love and not worry about this pandemic or an election. So don't worry. He's going to take all that worry away from you. He'll worry for you, and he'll tell you everything that you need to do. And let me say that although I've not observed this closely, I did see a key thing that appeared to me. Jason Kenney, who I have reported on him quite a bit, he is the Premier of Alberta, the guy who is a nominal conservative, conservative by name only. He's the guy who's presided over these church persecutions of James Coates and Jim Stevenson, seized their church buildings, put these guys in jail for 30 days, both of them in solitary confinement for a couple of weeks, and many other things. And so Jason Kenney, who proclaims that he is a conservative, after all of that stuff, in the middle of the summer, he said, all right, well, we're done with that. We won, right? Declared victory. But then as this election started to move on, you had Erin O'Toole, the guy who was going to be the conservative running, who was the conservative running against Trudeau, said, great, they did a great job. Excuse me. And said, we can move on now. And at that point, Jason Kenney, the Benedict Arnold of the Conservatives, pulled the rug out from under Erin O'Toole. And then Trudeau used that to whip Erin O'Toole, saying, see, he's a fool. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know how to handle this this situation whatsoever. And, of course, they kept the guy who really was about freedom. They kept him out of the debate, Maxime Bernier. Former U.S. President Barack Obama, ex-Democrat Party nominee Hillary Clinton, both supported Trudeau, tweeted their support for him and other things, but there wasn't any Trump endorsement of anybody, including the conservative O'Toole. And so, you know, they didn't want his endorsement, and they didn't get it, but they also didn't want to adhere to any conservative principles. What he did was he got drawn into a debate about climate change, and just like Larry Elder, He didn't have the backbone to tell the truth about it. Because, folks, it is exactly a mirror image. That's why on Friday, on the 15th anniversary of its Al Gore's inconvenient truth, or his convenient lie, on the 15th anniversary of that, I talked about how they had used the same plays. They had experts that you're not allowed to question. The science is settled. No, you can't see my data, even though I did it on university time, being paid as a public employee, and the research has been published. You cannot see my data. You cannot question me. I'm the expert. And then even having emails passed back and forth between Michael Mann at the University of Virginia and East Anglia University in the UK, Climate Gate is what they called it. It's the same play that these people have been running on us with a pandemic to achieve the same ends. And they're coming back with more of the climate change nonsense. And yet you've got these people who call themselves conservatives, people who know better, who do not want to tackle that. Just like you have these so-called conservatives who do not want to tackle the pandemic either. And then we have what is happening with civil asset forfeiture. How is it that the government can steal all of your liberty? How is it that they can steal your job? How is it that they can steal your home? How is it that they can take away your private property, your home, get you behind on your mortgages by the CDC saying we're going to put a moratorium on evictions and foreclosures, create a big balloon note to take out the middle class, where 45% of the residential property that was owned by the middle class, but now it's being bought up left and right by BlackRock. How are they able to get away with that? Well, I've said for the longest time, civil asset forfeiture is the key. Civil asset forfeiture is one of the things that was brought in by Constitution-hating, Bill of Rights-hating Joe Biden, part of the war on drugs. It was brought in during the Reagan administration, but he was very proud of writing these things and coming up with them. His mandatory minimums to put people in jail so we have a bigger prison population than any other country at any given time. His civil asset forfeiture and these other things. Joe Biden is someone who, when he was in his right mind, hated individual liberty more than anybody I've seen in politics and was open about it. And so a civil asset forfeiture, we've established the idea that there is no such thing as due process. Civil asset forfeiture is a complete abrogation of due process. You can have your property taken without being convicted, without even being charged with a crime. There is no proportionality between the amount of property that they take and what you would be punished with if it were a conviction. So you lose your protection, your presumption of innocence, your due process, your trial by jury, or any of this stuff, because they don't even charge you with anything. You get excessive penalties and punishment. All of this stuff is eradicated. It takes out about half of the Bill of Rights, civil asset forfeiture. And I reported on this back in February when it first happened. In Hollywood, well, not Hollywood, Beverly Hills, they had a private safety deposit box business. And the FBI decided that there was maybe some crime associated with it. So they took over this business. And they have found in this business $86 million. They started going through the safety deposit boxes. Again, no warrant, no specific warrant about anybody that they're looking for. Right? Remember, the Fourth Amendment says that you have a right to, you know, be protected in your person and your personal effects and so forth. Now, they just started going through all the boxes and everything they found. Oh, I'm sure that's associated with the crime. That's associated with the crime. $86 million in cash, a stockpile of jewelry, rare coins, and other things that people were putting in safety deposit boxes. They just took it all. And so the LA Times is even pushing back against this. And this is something that it just surprises me how it continues to fly under the radar when I talked to Megyn Kelly when she went to InfoWars to interview people. She interviewed everybody on the staff that was on air. And she was absolutely clueless about civil asset forfeiture. It's like, seriously? This has been around for decades? You're a lawyer? This was sent to me by a listener. He said, this is essentially the outlawing of all cash, along with other things. So what is happening is now, this first happened back in February, so they've been, this has been going back and forth for quite some time. One example, Joseph Ruiz's life savings were stolen by the FBI. He's an unemployed chef, and they took from him $57,000. Now, they looked at this and they said, well, we're taking it from you because we had a dog that sniffed the cash, and the dog alerted to the presence of drugs. Well, you can get that on any cash in America. Every bit of cash, if it's been in circulation, has got drug residue on it, and the dogs are pretty good with that kind of stuff. They can even train them to sniff viruses. So, yeah, dogs can identify that stuff pretty easily. His income, they said, was too low for him to have that much money, $57,000. They said that he had a side business that was selling bongs made out of liquor bottles. That suggested that he was an unlicensed pot dealer. So, and then the dog sniffed positive on it. However, he produced records showing that the money was legitimate. When they went through this, they said, well, we looked at your IRS stuff, and you only had income of $18,000. There's no way that you're going to be able to sock away $57,000. And he pointed out to them that he had had some compensation, $18,000 since 2018, they said. And that's less than a third of the cash in the box. But he proved to them, he turned over records showing that he had had a car accident injury and had been compensated for that. He had more compensation for chronic housing code violations at his apartment building. And so he was able to prove that he had this stuff. He said, they stole this money from me in broad daylight when I proved that it was legitimate, that it wasn't from a criminal source. He said they gave it back, but they didn't even apologize. Of course, you're not going to get an apology from them. They're thieves. Thieves and liars. That's why I call the FBI the FIB. The fibbers. But there's 800 people whose money and valuables were stolen by the FBI. And so a lot of them are pushing back on this. Some of them are too intimidated, perhaps. Maybe some of them are criminals. They don't want to be involved in this. But simply for having precious metals or cash, you should not be considered to be a criminal. And we see this happening over and over again with civil asset forfeiture. You'll have somebody who's pulled over in a car, and maybe they've got cash from an insurance settlement, and they just want to keep cash with him. They keep it in the car, or maybe they just went to Vegas. We've had a lot of these cases. And they'll say, oh, cash. Well, I'm taking that. That's obviously too much cash for you to have. I'm going to consider that to be drug proceeds. One of the first cases I heard about this was a private pilot. He did charter flights. He had his own personal jet. That was his business, his jet. And he was a pilot, so you could book a charter flight with him. He had two executives show up one day in suits and with attaché cases. And so he flew them from the U.S. to Canada for a business meeting that they had. And then he flew them back. And when he got back, all the lights from the cops and everything surround the plane. They come out with guns drawn. They arrest the two guys who went. They said they were in a drug meeting. And he goes, oh. And we're taking your plane. We're charging your plane with being an accessory to the drug situation. And he goes, what? I didn't have anything to do with it. Oh, we know that you didn't have anything to do with it, but your plane was an accessory, and so we're charging your plane. And when you look at these civil asset forfeiture things, it'll say the U.S. government versus Learjet, serial number, blah, blah, blah. And if you want to get it back, you have to sue them in civil court. That's why they call it civil forfeiture. It's government theft, but they call it forfeiture. You haven't broken a law. They haven't charged you even with breaking a law, so they call it civil. And as a result, you have to sue them, and you have to prove your innocence. That's how this thing runs. It's absolutely corrupt. And if they can turn the Constitution upside down with that, is it any wonder that they can do to us what they've done with this pandemic? And so Ruiz said it was a complete violation of my privacy. They tried to discredit my character, accused me of being a drug dealer besides stealing my life savings. By the way, that guy who had the charter business, it took him a couple of years, but he eventually got his plane back, but he was bankrupted at that point in time. Prosecutors so far have outlined past criminal convictions and pending charges against 11 box holders to justify the forfeitures, but it doesn't justify the forfeiture. It doesn't say that they committed a crime. Just because they had committed crimes in the past doesn't mean that this is the fruit of that, and they don't have to prove it. They don't have to charge them with a crime. Federal agents, listen to this. They have two things to identify criminal cash. Number one, alerted to by dogs, and again, every cash that's been in circulation has got cocaine, pot scent on it. If you've got a dog that senses that, they can get that. And the other thing was that it was bound up with rubber bands. Now, we used to have video stores, and we would have cash as well as checks, and when we'd take the cash in, we would have to sort it, you know, and put rubber bands around it. There's nothing criminal about that. There's nothing criminal about taking cash and putting rubber bands around it, but that's what the FBI is saying. They say the use of rubber bands is indicative of drug trafficking or money laundering. No, it's indicative of the fact that you have cash, and they want to make that illegal. U.S. private vaults was indicted in February, but no people were charged. You see, they indicted the business that had the safety deposit boxes, but they didn't indict the owners. Going back to the case of Aaron Schwartz, this is a guy who had he was a real hero in computer circles, and he had access to Harvard computer off hours or something like that. And it was technically a violation, but there was no maliciousness. He didn't hack any. He didn't do any damage. And the local prosecutor said, I'm not going to bring any charges against this guy. But they had a federal prosecutor, Carmine Ortiz. And she was being groomed to run for governor of Massachusetts. She came after Aaron Schwartz. She had also, in a case of civil asset forfeiture, gone after a hotel. And she had seized an entire hotel on the basis that over the past 15 years, there had been three drug arrests over 15-year period. Three drug arrests there, and they all said, well, the hotel didn't have anything to do with it. It's just people who rented the rooms, and then they used it for some kind of a drug thing. She took the entire hotel, charged the hotel with a crime. That outraged people. That outraged people. And then when she came after Aaron Schwartz, and he was somebody who was a hero because he was fighting against CISPA, ACTA, SOPA, PIPA, which eventually all these things got passed after he died. They got passed with the CISA, Cyber Intelligence and Security. But the P was about protection. And this whole thing was about protecting private corporations from being sued by you because they turn over everything, all the information that they have about you, turning that over to the government. See, before they passed CISA, if they spied on you and if they turned that information over to the government, you could sue them. But now you can't. And so she tried to send Aaron Schwartz to jail for 30 years, and he fought it. She offered him a plea bargain deal. He refused it. And then they said he was so distraught that he committed suicide. And then people really started criticizing Carmine Ortiz, who you don't hear about anymore. It ended her career. Her husband put out on social media and then immediately took it off that she did not drive Aaron Schwartz to suicide because she offered him just a 3-month suspended sentence in probation. So who killed him? Didn't seem like the kind of person who would commit suicide, but they got what they wanted. And it was amusing to me when Steve Pachinik was selling his whole sting lie that the hero in all of this was the guy at CISA who came out and subsequently said Trump is full of baloney. He wasn't the hero even to the Trumpers. Anyway, going back to this, some lawyers for box holders say that the government's entire operation is a money grab to acquire tens of millions of dollars for the Justice Department through forfeiture. Is exactly what it is. $86 million. You know, they've run this scam, civil asset forfeiture in Chicago, for example, typically against poor people. They'll seize their car for arbitrary nonsense, not bringing any charges against the people, just taking their cars. And typically, the value of the car that was seized was right around $1,000. Why? because for somebody to contest that, they had to pay a $900 fee just to start the process, and then they had to pay for their lawyers and so forth to get their property back. So if you got to pay $900 to file suit against these people to get your property back from law enforcement agents who just stole it from you without charging you with a crime even, let alone finding you guilty, that doesn't make any economic sense. So they're going around stealing cars that had an average value of $1,000 and getting away with it. That is exactly what is happening here. But this is much bigger. And that's why the LA Times is talking about it. And it is also a harbinger of what is about to come with digital cash, the criminalization of cash. The whole basis of everything that the FBI is doing here is the assumption that having cash is criminal. So no criminal conviction is required. No charges are filed. As the LA Times points out, the lax standard of evidence was apparent in the forfeiture complaint filed Monday against two brothers from Woodland Hills. The government wants to keep the $960,000 in cash it took from one of their safe deposit boxes and $519,000 it took from the other. But the complaint's only evidence was that one of the brothers, and it didn't say which, had allegedly been in contact with suspected armed robbers of cell phone stores. So think about this. You've allegedly been in contact with somebody who was suspected of a crime. I mean, this would be funny if they weren't actually doing this stuff. What a joke this is, our government. So blatantly criminal and corrupt. The lawyer representing them called the complaint an appalling and unconstitutional abuse of power. He represents other people as well, one guy who was operating under a pseudonym, who declined to discuss the specific case, but said that U.S. private vaults customers, quote, included many immigrant business owners who escaped repressive regimes, kind of like the one we're living in now, where banks are unsafe, and they have collected amounts of cash as their life savings over many, many years, so they don't trust banks. The notion that old rubber bands mean that they must be drug dealers is ludicrous, he said. Billions of dollars in cash cycle daily through businesses that sell marijuana, and experts say that leaves a detectable odor on bills that winds up in the hands of people who are neither dealers nor users. At U.S. private vaults, at least two boxes contain large sums of cash from licensed marijuana businesses. But they cannot open bank accounts due to the federal government banning the sale and possession of the drug. So the banks will not deal with them. So if they have a business where they are, according to the state of California, they are licensed marijuana businesses, their only option, because the banks won't deal with them, their only option is to go to something like U.S. private vaults, a private safe deposit box company, to put that money there. So it's not criminal. By the way, the war on drugs and government prohibition is a crime by the federal government. They don't have the authority to do this. They implemented, Richard Nixon implemented the UN four schedules. 10 years after they did it, 1961, the UN, he did it in 1971. So, under the Constitution, they have absolutely no authority to prohibit marijuana or any of these other things. They would require a constitutional amendment as it required for alcohol. Because we have the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, you had to have the 18th Amendment to prohibit alcohol, and then the 21st Amendment made it legal again. No such amendment exists for any of these prohibited substances that were part of Nixon's UN war on drugs. As they pointed out, the search and seizure of items from the U.S. private vault facility were authorized by the federal judge. The entire operation, they said, has been conducted in accordance with the Constitution and applicable laws. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing could be further from the truth. These people, these FBI agents, and these people who are engaged in civil asset forfeiture are just criminalizing cash. They said the government's theory that having cash makes you a presumptive criminal, and I think every American should be worried about that, said one of the senior attorneys doing there. They're trying to criminalize financial privacy, and they want to be able to replace all cash with digital cash. And if you have physical cash, if you have precious metals, they're trying to set a legal precedent that they can accuse you of being a criminal. And we should all be very concerned about this, because they're going to take away everything that we have if we do not have the ability to operate in a parallel underground economy. That's going to be required. These people are not going to stop as you see them shutting down entire hospitals because of a vaccine mandate. They want to shut down and take everything from us. They've declared that openly. They're doing it now. What's the question about this? And so if you're going to have your own precious metals or whatever else that you do as a barter for your side, you know, in order to stay alive in this, they're trying to criminalize that. If they push us into digital cash, they will be able to limit what you spend on it, where you spend it, what businesses will be allowed to accept it, how much you spend. Remember, they're talking about putting they've already had MasterCard working with the United Nations saying we're going to implement a carbon credit. We're going to look at the so-called carbon footprint number that they arbitrarily assign to particular activities or products. And as you purchase these things, they're going to start keeping a ledger of how many carbon credits, how much carbon you have used. You know, you buy a steak, well, that comes with a carbon price, you know, because the cows and so forth. So you go to the grocery store to get another steak. I'm sorry, you've exceeded your carbon limit. We're not going to allow you to buy that. They put out a digital currency as China's putting a time limit on the cash. So they can put a time limit on it, make sure you don't save anything. They can limit what you can buy in the name of saving the environment. And they can monitor everything that you do and control and shut down everything that you do. That's why we need to have cash, why we need to have precious metals, why we need to have safe deposit boxes. And that's why they're doing this in L.A. The S&P 500 yesterday fell 1.7%. At one point, it was tweeted out by Zero Hedge that it was down 666 points. I said, well, that gives you a clue as to who's running the stock market, doesn't it? But yeah, I don't know. I haven't looked at the market today to see if it's recovered this morning. But it was pretty much across the board. You had companies like Ford, GM, Boeing. Ford fell more than 5%. GM and Boeing fell 3.8%, 1.8% respectively. Steel producer Nucor shed 7.6%. Energy stocks tumbled as the West Texas Intermediate crude oil fell nearly 2% on concerns of global economy. And had Bitcoin dropping by 10%. Everything was dropping, you know. And this is one of the things that we're going to see probably when we have this crash. You have to be very concerned in terms of timing. Typically, we see markets crashing in October when they do crash, in a big crash. And now you've got the big banks saying, I think we're going to see a 20% correction. Is that going to happen? I don't know. But, yeah, Bitcoin was down by 10% from its highs, still up at 43,000 or so. They said, we think the mid-cycle transition will end with the rolling correction finally hitting the S&P 500. They said they believe a destructive outcome is looking more likely, said Wilson with Morgan Stanley. It's looking more likely that results in a pullback of 20% or more. So what is the trigger on this? Well, again, you know, they've created such a big bubble that pretty much anything, a blunt instrument, could puncture it. But what has happened in the last week is you have a major property group in China, Evergrande, and they've basically gone belly up, and they did it, interestingly enough, on the anniversary of Lehman Brothers going belly up. So it remains to be seen whether or not China is going to stand behind some of the debts that are coming due. But that's one of the key things that's giving the market shakiness. But understand that it's fundamentally, everything is fundamentally about the pandemic measures that they've taken. They have built a fantastic bubble, bigger than anything we've ever seen, in the wake of the Great Recession. That in and of itself was a giant bubble. It was allowed by the banks that were too big to fail, too big to jail. Those banks got that big because in the Clinton administration, they started allowing massive consolidation in the banking industry. I remember when it happened. We were in North Carolina. You had a guy named Erskine Bowles. He was involved in politics there, but he was also involved with Nations Bank, a very large bank that was headquartered in North Carolina. They wanted to merge Nations Bank in North Carolina with Bank of America, headquartered in California. And in order to get, they had to get the federal government's okay. And all the business press and Wall Street press was saying, you can't do this. That's too big. Those two banks are much too big to merge. Should not be allowed. Erskine Bowles, however, was in a high position in the Clinton administration, and he made sure that these two banks got the approval to merge. After that happened, everybody said, this is going to set off a wave of consolidation. You're going to wind up with a half dozen gigantic banks, and that's exactly what did happen. At the same time, you had Clinton shutting down the Glass-Steagall Act, which prohibited banks from getting involved in speculative investments that was put in there in the wake of the Great Depression, when speculation had helped to fuel the stock market crash. They said, well, we're going to insure federal deposits, but we're also going to put limits on the risky things that they can do. So Clinton removed that. He set off a wave of consolidation. Lo and behold, about a decade later, it all blew up, the Great Recession. And so they've continued to pump and pump and pump that bubble. And now, you know, it could be anything. It may be Evergrande. It may be something else. They will blame it on Evergrande, or they will blame it on the virus. But they sowed the seeds of this corruption. So as they're pointing out now, you got Bloomberg headlines, China property fear spreads beyond Evergrande, roiling the markets. And we also have inflation that they say, don't worry about it. It's just transitory. A feud has broken out, writes Zero Hedge, between the so-called Team Transitory, comprised mostly of pro-Fed, pro-Biden commentators, who urge the public to ignore all this hyperinflation. They say it's simply transitory. It's now painfully obvious that it's happening, but they say, don't worry. It's just the virus, and it's going to go away. So they don't want you to blame the Fed, don't want you to blame Biden, the Biden administration, whoever is running the Biden administration. For the collapse in the dollar's purchasing power, then there's the realists who see a much more ominous trend that is coming up. Real-time data is now showing that used car prices are once again on the rise after a slippage during the summer, confirming what Zero Hedge said moments after the Consumer Price Index report was published this week. That index jumped 24.9% from the same period a year ago in the middle of the month. Elevated used car prices have primarily been due to snarled supply chains and a shortage of materials such as semiconductors. They can't finish the new cars, so people are going out and bidding up the prices of used cars, even bidding up the prices of junk cars, which, if you go out and get really old stuff, there is another reason to get it. Eric Peters, I got to get Eric back on. Travis, we got to get Eric Peters back on. It's been a while since we've had him on. A lot of new developments, of course, in trying to steal our mobility and our liberty. But as Eric Peters has pointed out, you know, if you get something before all these electronics were added, unnecessary electronics that make your car expensive, but it also makes it controllable. If you go back to something, the more mechanical it is, the older it is, the better it is. So Biden is pushing the Democrats on taxes. All right, so we got the markets crashing. We got hyperinflation. Don't worry, it's just temporary. We've got entire segments of the economy being shut down with these supply chain issues. And then Biden wants to mandate 20 to 30% of the people get fired because they won't take a vaccine. I mean, he's trying to mandate a depression through this vaccine mandate. That's the purpose of this. He isn't going to force anybody to take a vaccine. But even if the full 30% of the people cave on this, even if they lose 10% out of the 30% that aren't vaccinated, even if they lost that many people, it would still be something that would completely crush our supply lines. And so with all that happening, what is the answer? Well, let's just keep printing money. Let's go into debt further. But already the government, which, you know, the government giveth, and the government taketh away, because they think they're God, right? And they're already starting to take it away. They're talking about massive increase in taxes. So as they're talking about putting out $3.5 trillion and more spending, they're also talking about raising taxes by $2 trillion. It's all about redistribution, even. I mean, it's not even, we're going to give this, you know, two steps forward and one step back. No, no, it's not even that. It's about redistribution. Meanwhile, the House Ways and Means Committee has advanced a portion that includes tax increase provisions as well as provisions that extend expansions of tax credits that benefit low and middle income households, but they are less aggressive than the Biden administration has been in raising taxes. And they have, in this committee report, for the time being, they've proposed a smaller increase in corporate tax rates and capital gains taxes, and they have not put on the death penalty that Biden wants. And they have also opposed the increase in the amount of information that financial institutions would report to the IRS about bank accounts. Say, when you look at that, when you look at this massive push by Biden, 80,000 IRS agents, $80 billion to the IRS to be used basically as discretionary spending. They don't put any tags as to how they use this. And the fact that they want it to know more and know everything about everything that everybody is doing in their bank accounts, that explains perfectly why the FBI would be raiding these safe deposit companies. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and IRS Commissioner Charles Rettig also sent letters to the Ways and Means Committee pressuring them to put back on higher tax rates, more surveillance, and more money for the IRS. The objective of this reporting regime is to help the IRS to pursue high-end noncompliance by providing some information about opaque income streams that disproportionately accrue to the top. In other words, don't worry, we're only going to go after rich people. That's been a lie from the very beginning. The initial income tax was simply about income. It wasn't about wages. And it was only a small tax, a very, very tiny tax on the 1% of the 1%. Look at where we are today. There are indications some type of proposal on bank account reporting could make it into the final legislation. Heritage Foundation, these guys are pieces of excrement when it comes to our individual liberty on this lockdown, when it comes to censorship. But when it comes to money, you can count on the conservative think tank, the Heritage Institution, to put a nail in it. Oh, they're Johnny on the spot when it comes to taxes and spending and stuff. But the rest of our freedoms, you can just kiss it goodbye. They oppose the rest of our freedoms. But listen to what they have to say about taxes, because they are right about that. Things you need to know about the Democrats' tax increase. With more than a $2 trillion tax increase, the bill is more than four times bigger than Obamacare's tax hikes of a half a billion. The goal of the liberal proposal is to put more of the economy's resources under the control of politicians and bureaucrats rather than the private sector. So, number one, it violates Biden's pledge. It will hike taxes on earnings of $50,000 and more. $50,000 is a median family income, assuming that you haven't been fired because of vaccinism. Biden has repeatedly stated that his tax package would not increase taxes to people earning less than $400,000 per year. As a matter of fact, they want toll roads everywhere. But in order to try to keep the appearance that they were not going to raise taxes on people more than $400,000 a year, they had the caveat that the toll road operators would have to do an income assessment before they would assess the toll to you. Reason Magazine, libertarians love toll roads, by the way. Another difference that I have with them. I hate toll roads. I refuse to use them as a matter of principle. And they're springing up all over Austin. It's unbelievable. Maybe they are where you are as well. But I refuse to use toll roads. But as they wanted, libertarians love toll roads. And they said, this is great. The Biden administration is pushing toll roads. But the problem is that they've made it unworkable by saying they're not going to apply the tolls to people who make less than $400,000 a year. But they're going to do it through the back door. They'll do it through the back door. They're also hiking individual tax rates. They're going to make the marriage penalty worse. The new bill will add a 3% surtax for all taxpayers earning more than $5 million. But the thing that's going to affect the middle class is going to be the change in the marriage penalty. In other words, you pay more. They build it into the rates for a married couple so that a married couple with the same amount of income as they would the two people individually are going to pay more than they would if they file their taxes separately. So they'll penalize you for being married. It raises taxes on pass-through businesses. It increases taxes on capital gains. And understand that when we talk about business taxes, those are always passed on to you in the form of higher prices or lower wages. Business isn't going to absorb that. They're going to pass that on, or they're going to go out of business. They're not going to say, oh, well, you know, or, you know, they may go out of business because maybe they don't have the capacity to raise prices because of the competitive business, because maybe they're competing against China, so they'll just put them out of business. The corporate tax rate, by the way, is higher than communist China. There'll be taxes on raw materials coming in to the U.S., and it includes a massive slush fund for the IRS, a lump sum payment of $80 billion. And the IRS will be allowed to spend that over the next decade on undefined, quote-unquote, strengthening tax enforcement activities, increasing voluntary compliance. Voluntary compliance, isn't that cynical? They always talk about that because they don't have, they say, we have a voluntary tax system because they don't have the legal authority to tax your wages. They put them on. They had temporary authority during World War II. It was supposed to end after World War II, but instead they kept sending out the forms and saying, we appreciate you voluntarily complying with the wage taxes. And they're still talking about that. Voluntary compliance. We're going to increase voluntary compliance by expanding audits and enforcement. Does that sound voluntary? Yeah, you got a choice. You can get the vaccine or not have anything in your life. That's like the voluntary vaccine mandates. So, yeah, this is what he has designed for us. One of the things that's in there, as they're rewarding their friends and punishing their enemies, one of the things they've done is subsidies for journalists. It's like, yay, all right, to get a subsidy? Well, no, actually, no. This is for the people that they like. This is for the local news journalists. And you can bet that it's not just going to be local newsrooms, but it's, you know, local newsrooms, establishment media, they're going to do exactly what the government tells them to do. So they're going to give you, if you want to get a subscription to a newspaper, they will give you a $250 credit if you get a subscription to a newspaper. So think about that. That's a good deal. That's a credit. It's not a deduction. $250. You can get the local newspaper, and if you got a pet that you're house training, you're set. That's what we used to say back in Raleigh. We'd have the News and Observer. We called them the Noise and Disturber. They would call you up in a cold call, and I'd say, well, you know, we've got a special deal going on right now, a subscription to the News and Observer. Would you like to buy it? So, no, I'm sorry. I'm not training any pets right now, and just kind of hang up because it took them a while to catch on to the fact that that's the only reason that I would have any use for your newspaper is if I'm housebreaking a dog. But what they're going to do is they're going to give a $25,000 per journalist 5-year tax credit. So they're going to start giving these local news organizations big money for the journalists that they have working for them. And then they're going to bribe people with a tax credit to subscribe to these local papers because they're such useful idiots for the government. Calculating the cost of the Afghanistan war and lives and dollars. You know, I want to talk about this because when you look at partisan websites like Breitbart and others, they are rightfully criticizing the Biden administration for this drone strike that was a face-saving move. You know, as everybody was criticizing them for telling the what apparently we've had it reported on Univision. Interesting that nobody else has picked up on that. It was in Spanish, this interview, but it was a high-ranking former official who said he'd been given information that they had a lock on the guy who was a suicide bomber, and they told him to pull it off. Don't do that. I had a friend of mine who was in the Marine Corps about 10 years ago, and he said, I don't understand why, you know, based on the rules of engagement, based on how we train to identify suicide bombers and take them out immediately, says, I don't understand how that end of it happened, unless they were given orders to stand down in the rules of engagement. But then we find out that, you know, from a high-ranking former official, that that was done with the drone strikes as well. So you look at all of that, you just look at the basic incompetence of abandoning a secure military base with a lot of different runways at Bagram that was only 30 miles away from Kabul, and trying to do it out of that airport with a single runway, all of the insanity involved in that. So, you know, the incompetence of that withdrawal was beyond belief as they were taking hits in terms of public opinion. They decided they would try to carve back their safe face by doing a drone strike and claiming that they took out a terrorist. When that happened, you immediately had the people there on the ground saying, you took out a family. You took out 10 civilians, 7 of them children. And they said, well, no, there were two different events. and when we first saw that, we saw a secondary explosion. People who were there said, no, there wasn't. And by the way, there weren't two separate events. Any confusion about that? And now, at the end of the week, you had the U.S. military say, all right, we killed 10 civilians. We targeted the wrong vehicle. There were not two different explosions. You had Milley saying it was a righteous hit and so forth. And so they wound up with even more egg on their face, so to speak, but 10 people who died. And, you know, it just reminds me of the old saying from Joseph Stalin that the death of one person is a tragedy, but the death of a million people is a statistic. Let's talk about the statistics that have happened over the last 20 years. Because, you know, when we look at the death and suffering that has happened in this Afghan war, and the fact that we invaded Afghanistan based on the lie of 9/11. Look at the number of Americans who have been killed. And oh, by the way, how did this war begin? On September the 18th, it took them only 7 days to determine that they were going to go to war because men in caves had flown planes into two buildings and knocked down three in just a few minutes, a couple of hours, right? As ridiculous as this whole narrative of September 11th. As I talked about it, I said, I don't know exactly what happened. I know what did not happen. I know what could not happen. And that is the official government story. As Arthur Conan Doyle had Sherlock Holmes saying, when you rule out the impossible, what remains, no matter how improbable, is the truth. Well, one of the things that we can rule out as impossible is the government's story. But based on that impossible story, we had a vote in the House of Representatives, 420 in favor of a war with Afghanistan, one against. In the Senate, it was 98 to nothing. I don't know who the two missing people were. The one person who voted against it was Barbara Lee of California, the only person in the House of Representatives and the Senate to vote against this war based on the lie of the 9/11 attacks. The median age group in Afghanistan right now, today, is only 18.4 years old. That's pretty amazing. You don't get to grow up in Afghanistan because of the massive amount of fighting that's been going on there. They said this, they've been at war first with the Soviet Union, then with the United States, from 1979 to 1989 with the Soviet Union. They had a civil war in the 1990s. And then in the wake of that, we went to war with them. So, you know, for decades, 40 years, they've been at war, essentially. We've had 980,000 U.S. Afghanistan war veterans. Of those, half of them, 507,000, served in both Afghanistan and Iraq. You've had 2,455 U.S. service members killed in Afghanistan. You've had 20,722 U.S. military wounded, many of them with their lives destroyed with the massive wounds that they engage. And then on the side of the Afghans that we are now so concerned about, the 10 people who were killed. Maybe we should have paid attention. Maybe Breitbart should have paid attention before to this. Or the Democrats. All the people who are upset about this, and they should be upset about it. It is a tragedy. But there have been 46,000 civilians have been killed. Now, that's not the combatants. That's 46,000 civilians. That would average out over 20 years to be 6 people a day. So when we look at this, and we put this in perspective, it's another reason for us to follow the prescription that we actually do debate, that we have a public debate. They rushed into this thing. With the authorization for the use of military force, we are now in endless wars with multiple countries. Nothing has been won, nothing has been stopped, and now they are turning that war back domestically. They love the Afghans now. I guess that's why 10 people being killed in Afghanistan is now suddenly a tragedy, because now the Afghans are good. They're being brought in, being put on welfare for life, unvetted. But the real terrorists are those of us who were in their targets from the very beginning. That's why they called it the Patriot Act. Because everything from 9/11 and Dark Winter has been to target patriots. It has always been about an internal war. The external operations were merely a temporary distraction that lasted for 20 years. To give you an idea of how this is running, just as we see Pfizer going out, and lo and behold, on the same day that they say, we've checked our stuff and we're good, down to 5 years old, it'll be rubber stamped by the FDA. We now have Pfizer determining that. On the same day that that happens, you see the mainstream media putting out, look at how many children we've got that are testing positive now. You see how they work the narrative? Throw this stuff out about children. And then, lo and behold, on the same day that they're coming up with a vaccine going down to the age of five, in a similar vein, I saw this article being pushed out by Yahoo News, how America created a gun-happy gangster paradise in Brazil. And, of course, picked up by the Drudge Report. What is that about? It's exactly the same tactic that they're using with the, oh, look at all of the new cases of children now that are testing positive. And, oh, by the way, we just approved it all the way down to 5 years old. This is about the UN Arms Trade Treaty. This is a coordinated push. This is how the mainstream media works hand in glove with the military, police, state, surveillance state, medical, industrial complex to take away your freedoms and to institute a dystopian society. So they want to push this UN Arms Trade Treaty. They want to push gun control. So now they're saying that all the problems in Brazil are because of American guns and not controlling small arms. Meanwhile, Bolsonaro is telling everybody in his country, hey, go get a firearm. You need to have a firearm. You need to be able to protect yourself. He's pushing the idea of self-defense by individuals, while these people, the mainstream media, Yahoo and the rest of them, are in a coordinated push to push the UN Arms Trade Treaty. Final news story here, the unconventional weapon against future wildfires. They say goats. Why goats? Well, because they're going to eat the underbrush that is fueling the fires. And there is an element of truth to that, but that's not the whole truth. Because it is not even so much, yes, getting, you remember that when President Trump pointed out, he says, hey, you just got to rake the forest or something like that. And he puts it out in a really stupid, awkward way. So they made fun of it. But that's the truth. So I've said before, my uncle was a forestry professor at the University of Missouri in Columbia. And he told me years and years ago, before he retired, this is back in the 1970s or 80s, he said, they're setting up a situation where we're going to have massive forest fires because they have decided, as they've moved from stewardship and a conservationist mindset to an environmentalist mindset, they've decided that taking out dead wood out of the forest is off limits. And so we've had massive forest fires. We've had them in Tennessee, where they typically would not have them before, and much worse forest fires that have been happening in the last few decades, not because of global warming, but because of a change of mismanagement by the Forestry Service, by the BLM, and by shutting down logging. Travis and I went up to Oregon. We talked to a guy that was up there as part of what happened to Lavoie Finicum. And he was a lifetime lumberjack, and he had bought property, private property of his own. That was really his retirement fund. And he was ready to retire. He couldn't work anymore, do that hard work anymore. But he lost everything that he had because of mismanagement of federal lands fires that started there and then spread and took out his property. So once it gets started, it gets really big. So part of it, yes, is getting the goats to take out the underbrush. But if you leave the dead wood there, as he pointed out, those fallen trees that are just left there become like giant canisters of gasoline. If you want to know why this is happening, again, it is mismanagement, knowing mismanagement by the government. Yeah, my uncle knew it. They knew it, too. We all knew it's common sense. That's it for today's program. Thank you for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.